This episode of The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
One story the guys told me, the story I believe, was from his days in Turkey. There was a gang of Hungarians that wanted their own mob. They realized that to be in power, you didn't need guns or money or even numbers. You just needed the will to do what the other guy wouldn't. After a while, they come into power, and then they come after Soze. He was small time then, just running dope, they say. They come to his home in the afternoon, looking for his business. They find his wife and kids in the house and decide to wait for Soze. He comes home to find his wife raped and children screaming. The Hungarians knew Soze was tough, not to be trifled with, so they let him know they meant business. They tell him they want his territory, all his business. Soze looks over the faces of his family. Then he showed these men of will what will really was. He tells them he would rather see his family dead than live another day after this. He lets the last Hungarian go. He waits until his wife and kids are in the ground, and then he goes after the rest of the mob. He kills their kids. He kills their wives. He kills their parents and their parents' friends. He burns down the houses they live in and the stores they work in. He kills people that owe them money. And like that, he's gone.
It is 22 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of December in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. It is December 2nd, 2010, the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for being there. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to be part of today's program. The phones have been... Wait. There we go. On turned. It is 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have on this very fine Thursday. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached as well electronically if you would like to do that. That is Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. Text box at rickemerson.com. The website is open. And you can also direct messages via Skype. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's how you do that. It's Rick Emerson Show at Skype. It is Thursday. Coming up today, we got your Geek Watch on the way. Clown Watch. Cheney Watch. Hey, let me ask you this. You're a journalist. Is it Cheney or Cheney?
Cheney.
You sure about that?
Yes.
Because it seems like I hear people pronounce it both ways.
Well, it's pronounced Cheney.
All right. Everybody else, they can just suck it then, because
right.
We're going to say Cheney from now on.
And it's emu, not emu.
Is it true? Do we know that with actual certainty?
Oh, I looked it up just to make sure, because I didn't trust. I don't trust anymore that I actually know anything.
No.
Ever since I started doing this show, because I...
The hell does that mean?
Well...
Like I'm some vacuum for intelligence?
No, it's not you. It's that I've become aware, normally in normal people who just live their lives, they have conversations and something comes up and they go, well, you know, John Wayne, his name at birth was Marion. And somebody goes, really? I didn't know that. And then you move on. And in this situation, now we have, I live in this world where I say, well, you know, John Wayne, his name was Marion. And then I might be wrong.
There's a hypercritical army of fact checkers.
I kept checking emails, and people are popping up in the text boxes. Like, no, that's a myth. You're wrong.
You're a poser.
You're stupid.
Yeah.
And it seems like I've come to realize that there are so many things that I think I know that it turns out, apparently, I'm completely wrong.
Just crap you've been saying all this time because there was nobody there to, like, call you out on it.
And yeah. I think I do pretty good. I think I'm probably actually right a good 85-90% of the time.
That's way above average.
And I think that's way above average. But the thing is, when you're just living your normal life, you kind of always think you're right.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have people just, like, immediately correcting you and telling you that you're wrong and then say, Dawn just makes stuff up.
Yeah.
She doesn't know anything.
Fail. Lol.
So now, honest to God, just about every time, I'd say a good 60% of the things we talk about, you'll ask me something and I'll say, why, yes, it's pronounced Cheney. And then I immediately think,
is it?
Am I wrong? And so I sit here and go, tickety-tickety-tick on the computer and go, pronounced Cheney, you know, and to see if I'm actually correct. Because I'm now doubting myself almost every time I say anything as a fact.
All right, now, as somebody once said, later tonight you're going to have the urge to drink heavily. Give in to that urge. Don't be a hero, Don. Just embrace it. Embrace the pain. All right. Here's the only thing that would make this better is if Cheryl was sitting in the back of the studio as she does at Outlook Portland waiting to yell the word fail across the room every time I made a mistake in the presence of a guest. Whatever you do, don't think about this. Just as you begin today's program, don't dwell on this fact. And God forbid, don't let this enter your head every time you enter the studio. That when you're sitting behind the microphone, that really it's a miracle of evolution and of chemical processing that you were able to speak and form sentences on the fly. That every time you open your mouth, your brain is dipping into a vast reserve and reservoir of words and beginning to string them together, you know, mere picoseconds before you're able to externalize them and vocalize them and put them out on the microphone. And that at any second, that entire thing, that process could just fail. It could come to a grinding halt and you'd be rendered just a series of pops and buzzes.
Well, I know the previous show that we did on Legion of News, we started the show, and I remember at the very beginning of the show, I was thinking to myself, damn, I sound good today.
Yeah.
I'm actually pronouncing things very loud. My voice sounds, I sound really good today. About halfway through the show, I stumbled over some words, and I felt myself starting to get a little lispy and a little moist in my mouth. And for the whole rest of the show, after that point, once I was aware of it, it was like, blah, blah, blah. I was just mush mouth the whole rest of the show.
It's like a guy in the Tour de France who hits a pothole and wobbles the other 15 miles.
Exactly.
Excellent. It's going to be the best show ever. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Christmas Watch, Cheney Watch, Clown Watch, Geek Watch on the way. We got the... Here's the thing about today's top five.
Okay.
I think I mentioned this to you before we went on just now. I so immediately regretted putting this together because I sort of assembled it this morning. I had the idea for it last night, and it's one of those things... I don't know if I had too much caffeine, not enough caffeine, too little sleep, not enough sleep. I was just, you know, in front of the computer late at night and maybe just, I don't know, I was being bombarded by electrons and my processing ability was not like, you know, wasn't like it is some sort of razor sharp point of perfection. And I thought, oh, this will be an interesting top five. And I made some notes to myself and I got it this morning and I, you know, downloaded everything and jotted everything in it and put it all in the thing. Came in here and I was just sort of assembling it now and putting it on the soundboard. And it's a colossally bad idea. I don't know what... I don't even know why.
Okay, what is it?
It passed muster last night in my brain. I had this, let me just say, in my own defense, well, two things. One, I have subsequently had a better idea for a top five, but I don't think I'm able to put it together. Mm-hmm. Now, we have done the thing on the show where somebody will throw out an idea for a top five, where it becomes sort of like an amazing race meets, top of the pops kind of a thing, where somebody will throw out an idea for a top five at, like, you know, 5 minutes into the show, and then we got an hour to put it together, get all the songs, get whatever. This isn't really that. This is just that as we were ending last hour, I came up with a much better idea for a top five, but I don't believe that I have sufficient time and resources to really make it happen. The top five that occurred to me last night, which is just prompted by a single song. Did you ever do the thing?
Now here's the thing I want to ask. When you thought of it last night, you were like, hey, this is a great idea.
It'd be interesting.
And then today, this morning, you went, hey, still a great idea. And you gathered the songs together. And only when you had gathered the songs together did you realize, wow, this is really lame.
Well, here's the thing is that it occurred to me last night, and it seemed like a good idea. And I'll give you just the backstory. And none of anybody really cares about this. But I was driving. It was, if you'd like to know, it was right past that... It was right past that Wendy's on Powell that's across from the bowling alley on like around 34th or so.
Oh, I get some of my best ideas there.
I'm saying it's some sort of it's a magical nexus of a place. Anyway, it's like my own personal Diagon Alley of theoretical musings. So I drove by and did you ever do the thing where you have like a shuffle mix or like you know like if you're like a you know it's like a some sort of like a Pandora thing where it's just doing a whole shuffle of, you know, the whole random collection of songs it just throws at you. And you hear something that you haven't heard in a long time, and immediately it just picks you up and it drops you back to, like, what you know, wherever time it was in your life that you were listening to that a lot.
Okay.
And you go, oh, yeah, do you remember the summer of, like, whatever when I was listening to that song constantly? You're like, oh, do you remember, you know, a couple years ago when this song came out? I will always associate blah-da-da-da-da with this particular song. So I was driving along last night, and this song, one of the songs that's on the top five, it came on, and I thought, man, what a beautiful piece of music this is. And I turned it up, and I was just listening to it, and just really just lost inside the rapture of this 4.5 minute recording, and just thinking, what a standout piece of composition this is, you know, in terms of production and performance, it's beautiful, and I thought, you know, I had to do an entire top five, you know, of songs that fall into the same category as this song. And I went, okay, you know, and I made a little note to myself. I'm like, okay, do that Thursday morning. So I went home, jotted it down to myself, do that, you know, I mean, because I make a note the night before, I'll make notes about stuff I got to do the next morning. So I wake up this morning. Now, here's the thing. I hadn't really had any caffeine or anything. Like, I'd consumed the Vizo, but it had just barely passed my lips. It hadn't entered my body, hadn't been processed. The caffeine hadn't fired off my synapses. I hadn't started ordering and processing all the events and facts of the day. I was still, for all intents and purposes, I was asleep. I was a thing that walked like a man, yet thought not. And so I looked at the note, and I went, it's top five of the songs. All right, okay. And I have a huge, you know, I have this 2-terabyte hard drive with all my crap on it. And so I rooted through and found all the songs, put them on, and I went, okay. So good. And I made another note to myself, put on soundboard when do show. And then I got here, and so about an hour ago, I saw the note. I'm like, I got to get the top five ready. So I started putting all of these top five songs on the soundboard. I know this is the longest, like, preamble to just a thing. But I started getting all the top five songs, putting them on the soundboard. And then I did the thing that I have learned that I have to do, because if I don't do it, we get effed. Is I just listened to each one of them real briefly to make sure that they all worked. And it was like hearing them all in rapid succession, I just went, oh, God, why did I do this? And that's the thing where, like, as Jerry Seinfeld once said, like, morning guy wants to yell at night guy for what he did, but night guy's gone. Night guy is nowhere to be found. Night guy has vanished, Lady Hawk style, until later on this evening. So now here's, like, morning and midday guy having to pay the price for the good idea that night guy foisted upon us. Anyway, so I put together this top five.
Okay.
This is the top five songs that in my life I have listen to relentlessly following a breakup.
You know, honest to God, I just recently thought of doing that top five myself.
Really?
Yes.
Why? Why did that occur to you? Because I know why it occurred to me.
It occurred to me because I was listening to some Henry Rollins. And there's this one particular Henry Rollins song that always reminds me of a horrible, horrible mistake I made with this one guy. And the first time I ever heard the song was right after I'd broken up with him. And I ended up pulling the car off the highway because I was laughing so hard I couldn't drive anymore. Because it was like the song was, it was like Henry Rollins reached out of the stereo and was like, this is about the relationship you just had.
Now, Don Taylor, I sing for you.
So he was like so then I kept listening to that song and then listening to other Henry Rollins songs and the aftermath of that breakup. And yeah, and I was thinking about that the other day and thinking about how I have at least 3 breakups that had distinctly different musical stylings that I moped to in the aftermath.
All right, so at least I'm not alone here. So it just, it seemed like such a great idea last night, and this morning it seemed like it didn't seem like a good idea this morning. I didn't really think about it. This morning I thought, well, I signed off on this last night. It must be good. I mean, nighttime guy knows what he's doing, right? Yeah, sure. Hey, okay. But just now as I was like, I just listened to the first like 5 seconds of each song just to make sure they all played. And it was just, you know, it's like one endless punch to the junk. So, but you know what? We can't be cowardly about these things. Oh. I've put it out there, and now it must be done.
I'll bring in mine, like maybe next week.
All right.
Not tomorrow, because you don't want to do this like one right after the other.
And you think you can't do it on a Friday.
No.
We learned that time that we did the five most depressing songs ever recorded on a Friday, and it was like Cats in the Cradle and like Hurt by Johnny Cash, and it was just, and Scott Daly started crying like a woman in the studio. We were playing Cats in the Cradle, and he started blubbering about his baby.
God.
And it was just, you know, it was just a horrible pro. So it just, we've learned that we can't do that. Anyway, so we'll get to that later on. The top five songs that I've listened to relentlessly following breakups in my life. So that's coming up later on today in the Rick Emerson Radio Program, so we can all be awkward together. What headlines are you following for the good people of Portland on this Thursday, Don Taylor?
Well, as we know, caffeinated Four Loko is soon to be a thing of the past. Google has changed their search algorithm, and German customs officials seized fake unicorn meat.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Radio Program is brought today by Sorrell's Vintages. They are located at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne Street, right next to Powell's Books and across from the Baghdad Theater. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is Sorrell's Vintages, about whom we will speak more later on in the program. You doing a thing?
I have. Well, I'm thinking about, because you
opened your mouth like you were going to say something.
No. Do you have more that you need to say?
Well, it doesn't really matter.
You can.
It's just more of my blather. What were you going to say?
Well, because you mentioned before the thing about how something just immediately happens, like a song or whatever. It takes you back to a certain period of your mouth, your youth.
Don't let that get in your head.
Well, no, because I'm thinking about my mouth. I have this lipstick. It's actually sitting right here. I'm holding it in my hand at this moment. I haven't bought a new lipstick in a long time. I've been wearing other stuff by lesser than. I hadn't bought a commercial lipstick from like a drugstore in a long time.
When you say you haven't been wearing commercial lipstick, have you been smashing it? Have you been like putting berries between rocks down by the river?
No, I've been buying stuff from online purveyors who sell like mineral makeup. And So it's like some kind of different thing that comes in a tube that you twist up and it's like a goo and it's got like...
Like lip gloss?
Kind of like lip... Well, I've used...
I don't know what lip gloss is.
Well, I've used lip gloss, and then I've also used the stuff that's like a kind of a liquid lipstick that comes out of a thing with some foam on the end of it and for an applicator. It's weird. But I haven't had like an actual, you know, proper lipstick in the old-fashioned sense in a really long time. And I went to Walgreens, and I bought one, and I was like, oh, I'll buy it, because I buy everything at Walgreens.
You're all class.
And I'll buy L'Oreal, because I remember, you know, I used to wear L'Oreal lipstick
because
all the time.
Because Lauren Hutton told you to do it?
Well, no, and I opened it up, and I was using it, and it has a very, very distinct scent.
Right.
And you don't really think about lipstick or makeup at all, just regular makeup, as having a perfume, as having a scent. But companies do add scents to their different products so that they do smell distinct, and I think it's probably to psychologically keep you
loyal to a brand. Sure, it's to have an association, yeah.
Well, I used to wear L'Oreal lipstick all the time when I was in my early 20s, and I would get, like, dolled up to go out, like, on the town.
On the town.
Go to parties, go to bars, wherever, hope to meet a young gentleman, you know, and you know. And so I realized as I was putting this on that it just immediately took me back, the smell of the lipstick, to this time in my life that was just full of desperation and horniness. So that's the L'Oreal lipstick for me on every single day.
What is the shade there?
What is the shade? The shade is...
Assuming it's not called Desperation and Horniness.
No, it's Mauve Amour.
All right.
But yeah, it should just be called Desperation and Horniness, because that's the association I have every time I put it on now.
It's not like I spend most of my formative years putting on lipstick, so I don't really have that association. What I do have is that every now and again, here's a retarded memory for you. So I, you know, it's not like I really know how to put myself together now. It's just that here's the thing about having short hair as opposed to having long hair. It's not like I really know what I'm doing with my hair, but with short hair, there are just fewer options. And so it's like, by definition, there's less that can go wrong, you know? Like, if you have, like, the longer your hair, the bigger disaster it can sort of become, especially if you're a guy who doesn't know what the hell he's doing, which I did not for most of my youth. You know, because it's like I just had, like, a series of bad mullets, or the bi-level, as we called it. So I had no idea what the hell I was, you know, and it's like you know, and I would just have terrible split ends because I didn't know they were supposed to cut it ever, like trim it, and I didn't, you know, and I would just, and I tell these stories to women and they all sort of recoil because it's like, you look back at photos of me and I just had absurdly long hair, but it's like, I was just some dirtbag guy, so it's like, I didn't really ever think to take care of it, and I would, you know, I'd get out of the shower and take like, you know, like the cheapest, like a Woolworths brush and just go like, dragging through my hair, just tearing it all out, and, you know, probably, and just doing untold damage to it. Because I had no idea that there was it's like I didn't know you could dress well. It wasn't a thing that ever occurred to me. I thought you just dressed like in crap from Sears, and that was like how life went, and then you died someday. So I didn't do anything to take care of my hair. But I went through this stage when I was, I don't know, maybe like 14, 15, 16, where I just, I had this whole fixation on Led Zeppelin, and I had this thing about wanting to be Jimmy Page. And I would just stand in front of the mirror just for hours on end, like thinking, how can I better attain this look? And the thing is, there was no great gazoo to appear and just go like, it's not going to work. I didn't have like Dexter's dad sort of conjuring next to me and going like, son, you're hopeless. Take your life now. But I didn't know that. And it's like, not in Kennewick, there's no role model for you. There's no fashion roadmap in the Tri-Cities. So I would just try these horrible experiments with my hair and just what you think. And it's like, most of them are not, like, nobody ever saw them, because then I would realize instantly, like, oh, God, this is even worse. And then I would get rid of it. But you remember the 80s, and there was this thing in the 80s which may have come back, I don't know, but where the deal was trying to make your hair, like, immobile. And that was like sort of the age of Aquanet.
Oh, yeah.
And you would get, and there was like, and there were all these like absurd descriptions, like Aquanet, like mega ultra super hold. You know, the Aquanet, like, you know, ultra extra hella special hold. You know, and it was just, and it was all the same. I mean, it was all just like glue that they
said. Yeah, it's just spray lacquer.
That's all it is, man. It was just like your Elwood Blues fastening down the gas pedal in the Bob's Country Bunker van or whatever. It would just spray it on your hair, and then like your hair, nothing would, it would just break off if somebody bumped up against you. But there was this one like week when I was about 15. I don't know why I think about this all the time. That there was this hairspray that was popular in Los Angeles when I paid a visit to that fair city. And we mentioned this, I think, the other day with Anna Griffin. We were talking about the fluorescent clothing being popular in L.A. and then everywhere else got it a couple years later. There was this hairspray that was popular in Los Angeles. It was the worst ever name for a hair product. It was called Stiff Stuff.
Ah, yes, I remember.
Yeah. And it's like, and I said, you know, like I had like some fat, like a cousin or something who used that. And I thought, oh, that must be what all the cool kids are using. So when I went back to Kennewick, I either bought it and brought it home with me, or it's like I found some at like a store somewhere, and I decided that was going to be the key. Like, that was going to be the skeleton key. It was going to help me open the many doors of fashion that up to that point had remained locked off and inaccessible to me. And so I used, and then I just realized, I think, eventually that it was expensive and did no good. But like probably once every 6 months, I will smell something that smells exactly like that hair product. And I don't know what it is. And it's that thing where you're like in an elevator or, you know, like in the mall or something. And you go, what the? And you turn, and it's like, I always try to identify who it is. Not that I guess there's even a tactful way to ask, like, pardon me, what do you smell like? But I've just been so curious, because I don't even think that stuff exists anymore. But there's something that smells exactly like it. And it had an incredibly distinct scent. So,
yeah, cheap hairspray always takes me back to going to punk rock clubs when I was a youth, because the bathrooms at like the Whiskey A Go Go and stuff like that just always reeked of the cheapest hairspray. You know, Aquanet and Breck and whatever was on sale at, like, you know, the drugstore. Because whether it was the boys' bath, men's bathroom, or the ladies' bathroom, it didn't matter. Somebody was trying to make their spiky parts stay spiky, and so there was always somebody in there just spraying the hell out of their head with some kind of spray.
No, there was. Well, it was like everybody had this idea that they were going to be cast in the next Penelope Spheeris documentary.
Well, and also it got very sweaty if you were, like, jumping up and down and doing this. It got very warm in those places, and that's hail on your dew, you know?
Okay. Anyway, I don't even know what we're talking about here. Blah, 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 desperation, horniness, lipstick, stiff stuff, and the top five. So the top five today will be, the top five songs to which I have listened to relentlessly following a breakup in my life. So we'll get to that later on. Real quickly, Wire fans in the house, and I know you are out there. So at the urging of, and I forget if this was you as well, or if it was just Bruce and Cheryl, but they had mentioned this television show, Luther, that airs on BBC.
Indeed.
So now I'm watching Luther. I'm almost done with the second episode.
Isn't it terrific?
It really is quite good. I'm about 5 minutes away from the conclusion of episode two, and I think there's like only six or seven episodes or something for the first season of it. And I don't know if there's been a second season yet, but it stars Idris Elba, who played Stringer Bell on seasons 1 through 3 of The Wire, and it effed with your head too, because you see him on The Wire and he's got like the flawless Baltimore accent, and you know there's so many people on that show. The vast majority of the actors in that show are actually from Baltimore. Baltimore. They're Baltimore natives. And I just sort of assumed he was until I saw him interviewed on, like, some acting panel a couple years back. And he spoke, and he's got this, like, incredibly, like, posh, polished British accent, and it just, like, takes your brain apart.
Yeah.
But he uses his natural accent on the show, and it's really, really good.
And I'm not even sure if this is his natural accent, because this is much more... He uses more of a working-class British accent, I think, on Luther than his normal speaking voice.
Is that so? Because I think I've only heard him use his natural voice once, so
yeah.
Maybe that's true.
I could be wrong about that, but, yeah, he's got that kind of... That kind of not entirely upper class kind of thing, like Michael Caine has.
Yeah, it's really good though. Luther is a fantastic
yes.
show, but so that's what I did last night. So I just sat there, in front of my laptop watching episodes of Luther, and then I did that thing where I don't know if you do this because I know that you and I we both have what we might charitably refer to as food issues, and I've learned that if I'm trying to eat well, if I'm trying to keep myself just stuffing my mouth full of just endless pounds of just crap and fattening garbage. What I have to do is sometimes just go to bed early, because if I am up and watching television, then it's like my mouth is the devil's playground, and it's like, or like a devil's, you know, like a devil's like a guest cottage or something, and it is the quintessentially American thing of just sitting there and watching television, and then I get this thing of like, well, there's something missing from this equation. What is it, exactly what integer is not present in this algorithm? And it's food. And so around 2:30 last night, I was just getting ready to sit down and watch the second episode of Luther, and I had this whole, this moment of decision of like, okay, I should go to bed right now, because if I go to bed right now, I won't be awake and watching television, and I won't then feel the need to get the third part of that hat trick going, which is going to the refrigerator and just rooting around until I find something and placing it in my mouth. And then immediately I just gave in to the temptation, of course, which is what you always do. You know, you debate, but it's like the minute you say, it's like unless you just... It's like a whole Tony Robbins thing, but unless you just make the decision right then, you're hosed. If you debate, if you prevaricate, if you just wobble back and forth on the line of decision making, you will always default to the wrong choice. And so, like 5 minutes later, I find myself back in front of the laptop, back sitting on my big spongy ass. And I've got that turkey that you made for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
You brought here. Now, that is a fine food. What is not a fine food is the spray cheese and the cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits that have to accompany it, of course.
Oh, yeah, but still.
So, in a way, I have to apologize to you because you went out of your way to make this fantastically prepared turkey where it's like you've gone, you've done the thing of like cutting it and splaying it and cooking it and roasting it and, I don't know, re-roasting it and slathering it with some sort of magic Dawn elixir or whatever. And then I just cover it in spray cheese and I stick it on a Triscuit. I mean, I might as well just be eating it in a sewer.
It's still just a turkey. It's not like I did. No, actually, the cooking method. We talked about this.
Yeah,
it's a pretty simple right. method. I've been we did a second turkey a couple of days ago, and so I've been living on turkey sandwiches myself. So, which has made me and I mentioned this off the air, like I think
is this
yesterday.
Your mayonnaise thing?
I every year we do turkey, and every year I get excited because now I can have turkey sandwiches, and I love. Turkey sandwiches from like actual like fresh roasted turkey. I don't really like the sliced stuff that you get at the supermarket that much. I like actual, honest to God, just cut off the bird turkey. I'm like, yay, turkey sandwiches. And I have, of course, like my own, what I think is the perfect turkey sandwich, which is a substantial bread, not overly like multi-grained, but a substantial kind of a bread. And then a little mayonnaise on one side, just enough to lubricate. And the turkey on the other side, a little bit of cranberry sauce. I like the cranberry. I only came to the cranberry sauce on the turkey sandwich a couple of years ago. I always thought that was weird, but then I started trying it. It's delicious.
And, fair enough.
And provolone cheese. I've decided that provolone is the perfect cheese for a turkey sandwich. But every year this happens, and every year I have to come to grips with the fact that...
Is this where you get about half pound into it and you realize, I'm sick of goddamn turkey?
Well, no. I almost never get sick of turkey. But I'm freaked out by mayonnaise. I loathe mayonnaise. And I know that it's a necessary component of things like sandwiches.
Right.
So I put on just enough to kind of... So the sandwich
isn't dry. Well, just enough so you
dry.
Can taste it.
But I can't stand it if like somebody puts a lot of mayonnaise.
Oh no,
on
like
a
glob of mayonnaise.
And it's globbing
is bad.
Out.
No, it's the worst thing ever.
And when I'm making the sandwich, if I get mayonnaise on my hands, I'm grossed out.
Because then your hands smell like mayonnaise for like, and it's impossible to get off. It's like like the smell of gas. It's just there for the remainder of the day.
I'm actually kind of. I realize I'm really kind of horrified by mayonnaise.
Yeah.
It's just awful, and I can't go wash my hands fast enough when I have mayonnaise.
Well,
on
because
my
it's
hands.
Just. Because it's just like salted grease, basically. I mean, that's like mayonnaise is. We've had this.
I know,
like
it's just oil and eggs, and you know, and it's not. There's nothing really gross about mayonnaise per se. The ingredients of mayonnaise. But I heard this one of those horrible stories like kids tell each other at slumber parties when I was a kid that had to do with mayonnaise.
Was it like, and then we left it in an aluminum bowl in the sun all day?
Well, no, it was.
Oh, I know the story. You've mentioned that story before, and that's the one with pus.
Yes.
I don't want to hear that story.
And so for a long time, I couldn't eat mayonnaise at all for years. I think that's still part of it. That this part of it, I just look at mayonnaise, I'm just like, ugh.
Pus. We've had this discussion before, and I can never remember the answer to this, but I know that there's some difference between salad dressing and mayonnaise, and I forget what it is. It's like the one has eggs or something, and one doesn't.
Well, no, with like the Miracle Whip stuff, mostly I think the difference is there's vinegar and sugar.
I think that's the thing, is that one either has an ingredient or lacks an ingredient, and mayonnaise is actually a quantifiable. It's like eggs and something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can make your own mayonnaise just by emulsifying, you know, eggs and...
That's the thing about it is you're just eating. Hey, here's a question about if mayonnaise has eggs in it, those eggs aren't cooked, are they? So is it a thing where you're not having just a whole jar of uncooked egg?
Well, no. Well, I don't know how they make commercial mayonnaise. I really don't. I do know that mayonnaise is ostensibly something you should not leave out at room temperature.
I was just
for
thinking
a long period of that, time.
That's the thing about leaving it out in the sun. This is like the whole thing of how cookie dough is filled with raw eggs. Yeah. I mean, I've never gotten salmonella, so it seems like I'm pretty like it. I'm either immune to it, or it's just the scare. You know, the risk for that is greatly overstated.
But
you're basically just eating a jar full of raw eggs, unless they pasteurize it, maybe
they have to pasteurize it. I'm sure for
you couldn't just sell that to Americans.
And then it's got like stabilizers and things in it. It's got weird chemicals added to it.
I am with you on this, though. The thing about condiments in general for me is that they've got to be just present enough that my tongue can detect them. You know? Like, just enough so I can tell they're there. But the thing about mayonnaise is, like, it turns... Okay, here's a disgusting thing. I'll say this and you'll recoil a little bit because you know what I'm talking about. Have you ever done this? You're eating a sandwich, and this goes back to my whole thing of my bread always has to be toasted. It's not like it's a phobia. I mean, I can eat it, but I mean, I strongly prefer, because, you know, the thing about the toasted bread, that is one more bulwark against the encroachment of the soggy, like, mayonnaise thing going on, you know, and this is all, and I mentioned this all because my grandmother, because her house was literally, she would just serve Wonder Bread. That was, like, the only bread she had. With lots of mayonnaise. And it's like, you can't find a worse combination than that for me. That is my ninth circle. That is where I will go someday to be tormented for time and all eternity.
One of my mother's favorite sandwiches to make when I was a kid growing up was Miracle Whip on white bread with sliced tomatoes.
Kill me.
To this day, I will not eat Miracle Whip on anything ever.
God damn. But one of the most horrible things about mayonnaise, if you share and I don't know, it might just be you and I, but is when you, this happens typically with like your wheat bread, sort of a non-uniform bread. When you bite down on the sandwich, and then what you didn't realize is there's like some large knot hole in the bread, and then the pressure of your mandibular action on the bread, it like extrudes the mayonnaise up through the hole, and then like before you know it, your fingers are up to their ankles in mayonnaise.
Yeah, you've eaten meals with me. I'm not one of those really super persnickety eaters, but there are certain things that I will do in some cases. Like if I order a sandwich in a restaurant and it comes and it's just completely slathered with mayonnaise, before I do anything else, I will deconstruct the sandwich and remove large portions of the mayonnaise and then put the sandwich back together.
Good for you.
Because I just find it kind of horrifying.
No, that's what I'll do too in a restaurant, because they always disregard my instructions to, you know, very light on the mayonnaise, or they have a different idea of what really light means. That's why, for example, one of many reasons I don't go to Subway, because the smell of that place horrifies me for some reason. I don't know what it is.
No, it does smell horrible.
See, you are the only other person I've ever known who's felt that way. The smell of a Subway, regardless of like how the sandwich actually tastes, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever. I mean, it's not like I really care that way, you know, that much one way or the other, but the smell of a Subway sandwich shop is just one of the worst things on earth.
It's the combination of all the ingredients that they have on their bar all open, so all of the smell is coming up into the air. And I swear to God, everyone I've ever been in also smelled like they had been mopping the floor with dirty water.
And like wet bread. It smells like wet bread. Anyway, but I would always say like real light on the condiments, and they would just, all right. you know, went out of those tubes.
I've seen them take that squeeze bottle of mayonnaise and go,
seriously,
and it just felt queasy.
Here's the worst thing I ever saw at a Subway. I'm not trying to knock them, but the guy like picked up the squeeze bottle of mayonnaise, and which is not code for anything. He picked up the mayonnaise squeeze bottle, and it like he has the gloves, right? He has the little cellophane, you know, the gloves, you know, for health, as they're leaving the things like open,
right.
As they're leaving all of the tubs of beets or whatever open for 12 hours at a time with flies on them.
And then scratching their face and then doing something else. And then
and also
taking your money. But still, but they're wearing gloves.
And also,
so, you know, you're safe from germs.
Serving you huge portions of fat and grease between starch, by the way. But, you know, make sure that it's healthy. I don't have any problem with Subway in particular, by the way. I'm just saying. But he in the glove, he like picks up the huge squeezy thing of mayonnaise, and he squeezes it, and then he drops it, and he goes, "Oh, that thing's so greasy, it just squirts out of your hand."
Just
squirts out of your hand. Like a bar of soap in the shower, one imagines. I don't even know where I was going. Anyway, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, Geek Watch, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas, the top five songs that I have listened to relentlessly post-breakup in my life. We'll get to those as well. Don't forget, this coming Saturday, we are going to be at Christmas Mountain Trees. That is a family farm. You can find out more about them by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com, ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It's a family farm, been there for three generations, going on four. You can find driving directions at that website. You can also go to their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Christmas Mountain. You can get the weather updates, find out what the roads are going to be like. This coming Saturday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m., Don Taylor, myself, Cheryl, Bruce, assorted significant others, we will all be in attendance, and we'll be picking out trees for our homes, and then one for the break room here at the Emerson News Network. And we're giving away five Christmas trees to fortunate Rick Emerson listeners. And if you want to get yourself a shot at a Christmas tree from Christmas Tree Mountain, you just send an email to tree, T-R-E-E, just like it sounds, tree@rickemerson.com, tree@rickemerson.com. You see full details on this at blog.rickemerson.com. But you just send an email to tree@rickemerson.com. The only requirement is you got to be able to pick it up on Saturday. So you must be able to pick it up on Saturday between 9 and I think noon is the cutoff time there. So you got to be able to go up Saturday basically and pick it up while we're going to be there. But you send an email to tree@rickemerson.com. We're going to be giving away five of those. You can find out more by going to ChristmasMountainTrees.com. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Canadian teacher has been suspended after she gave her 8th grade students a sexually explicit multiple choice test that included questions about anal sex, lesbian encounters, and penis sizes. Several parents filed complaints after students at André Laurendeau High School on Montreal's South Shore were asked whether or not, quote, blacks have bigger penises, or if they agreed that, quote, all sexual positions are comfortable. Students were also asked questions about sperm, anal sex, and lesbian sex.
The kids are how old?
8th grade.
Well, that's just too young. Never mind.
The school board has opened an administrative investigation. School board director André Bayette told the QMI news agency that the exam was too explicit for young teens, adding that the teacher wrote the test herself as part of a religion and ethics course.
All right. Well, see, that was going to be my next question. Is it like, was this a variation on some existing test? Was this a test that the school does give, but to typically, you know, but it's to older students most of the time? Or was this just like the teacher went nuts and decided to talk about penises all day in class?
Well, I don't know. I think she was teaching sexual education as part of a religion and ethics course.
Because the school didn't say, like, imagine if any student of any age was given that test in America.
Right.
Like, they would just, I mean, they, you know, she'd be running out of town, you know, but, I mean, at minimum.
I mean, these are like 13-year-olds, so it was a little,
but it
little
doesn't,
much.
It doesn't sound like the school district was horrified by the content of the test. It's just that it was given to students who were too young, which means that there is an appropriate age in Canada at which time you quiz school children about the penis sizes of black men.
Well, the school board director said, "I find the questionnaire dubious even for college students."
Ah, okay.
"We do not approve of the content of certain questions. How does this help the sexual education of students? It's totally unacceptable."
All right, so it's not like it's part of the Canadian curriculum.
No. This was just her own thing
All
that
right.
she did. The school withdrew the test following a parent's complaint and ordered the teacher to stop teaching sexual education to students. When confronted by her bosses, the teacher said her test was aimed at fighting society's prejudicial views about sexuality. More parents then came forward, prompting her suspension. The news agency contacted two sexologists, and they were split in their opinions of the test. One said that the quiz was inappropriate for students of that age group and that the elimination of sex ed courses in Quebec has led to teachers taking their own sometimes ill-advised initiatives.
Okay, am I the only one that thinks that sexologist sounds made up?
I know. It's a terrible phrase.
It doesn't sound like it can possibly be – it sounds like it ought to be like carnologist or something. Sexologist, that's like – it just seems like one of those – You know, like it's a faux degree that you've gotten somewhere, or like
being an astrologer instead of an astronomer.
Yeah, you know, or like a thing that they ought to teach in school someday, and that perhaps in the future they will offer degrees for it, but they don't now, so people are just free to call it whatever they want. I have a friend of mine who's a sexologist actually, and it's like it's a person I haven't seen in quite some time, but we have a friend in common. I'm like, oh, whatever happened to so and so? Well, she became a sexologist, and it's like fine, more power to her. It's just an odd name for something.
Hmm. I couldn't do that because I don't. Well,
you just sit there and get too turned on by your clients.
No, I actually.
Tell me more.
Actually, quite the opposite. I know a couple of people who are very involved in sexual education and sexual activism and stuff like that. And I just find the idea of spending that much of my time thinking about sex and talking about sex.
Let's be honest.
And
that much
talking
more
about
of
sex
your
with
time.
Other people, I just find it kind of weird and creepy, frankly. You know, every time I get invited to some, and we're doing a workshop on rope bondage.
Right.
And I was like, really? Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Is it a common phobia of women that your gynecologist is getting turned on by the exam?
I don't think so.
Really?
No.
That's a thing. See, that is a thing that I think guys always wonder about women, especially, and women as they interact with male gynecologists. Mm. I think guys automatically put themselves in the position of, well, maybe of the doctor, but also the woman. And guys, I think guys automatically just assume, that that is a thing you'd be weirded out by.
Oh, I don't think so, because I think most women, when you go to the doctor, you understand
that it's just a gig.
It's their job.
All right. No, I'm just curious.
Are guys paranoid that when they're getting a rectal exam that their doctor is getting turned on?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not, but I'm just saying.
Yeah,
like,
it's...
Yeah, but men are basically pigs. I just wondered if it was a thing that you were unnerved by.
I'm not, and I don't think I've never heard a woman say that to me. So I do know that there are women who are far more comfortable with female doctors, but that's a comfort thing. That's not a concern that the guy's getting turned on. It's just
I'd rather
be touched by another woman intimately like that.
I know women. Strangely enough, actually, this is sort of both. This is both sides of the equation are sort of the same here for different reasons. Just as I know men who, if they get a rub down or massage or something, they don't want it from another guy. I know women who won't get a massage from another man because they live in fear that the guy's getting, like, they don't like the idea that the guy's somehow getting off on it because they view it as like an act that might be inherently arousing to the giver.
I don't think my ego is big enough, at least not in that direction, to make that assumption that just because someone is touching me, particularly in a professional capacity, that they're going to be aroused.
All right. Yeah, I had no idea one way or the other. It was just a thing about which I was curious.
Huh,
how do we get onto that subject?
Because of the
sexologist.
The sexologist.
So you don't. So your thing is just that you find it off-putting to hear about other people's sexual behavior.
No, I don't even find it off-putting. I think what it is I'm just sort of baffled by people who decide that that's going to be – it's like we were talking in the last hour about guys who belong to gun organizations.
Right, right.
You know, and so like they're spending all of their free time hanging around with other people who have guns and talking about guns and fondling their guns and shooting their guns. And people who are really, I'm polyamorous and
right.
I'm into S&M and I belong to this organization and I'm going to a workshop on how to spank somebody.
Right.
And you're kind of like – do you do anything else?
Now, you and I, if we've talked about this before, you and I share the disdain for people like that, which has nothing to do with being like narrow-minded. It's not like I disapprove of that. It's just like, if your entire life and your entire lifestyle, I guess maybe is the better way to put it, is about that aspect of your existence, then it's just, To me,
I just
it's
wonder
just,
what has gone wrong with you that
you know
that's it's you know
yeah that's my thing is like I yeah and yeah so no we that is the thing that you and I share that just the sort of it just makes me not even uncomfortable. I just find it, I don't know, there's something just very sort of off-putting about it.
I also just assume these people must have like much more active libidos than I do, because you know I like sex, don't get me wrong, but I have no interest in just thinking about it that much.
No, see, but I think it's the opposite. See, that's this is my thing, is that I think, and this is just my opinion, I am just speculating, I could be way off here. I believe, I'm glad you asked this, actually, because that hadn't occurred to me until you said that just now. And here's the thing. I think that people, because here's the thing, is like we all know people like this. I can think of 3-4 people off the top of my head that I know that fall into this category. We all know people who just in like normal conversation will find ways to like saucily, you know, like imply or, you know, to let you know like how much sex they're having or to have, you know, like how much like weird, bizarre or like unsettling sex that you couldn't even comprehend. Like you just, if you knew how deviant I was, it would blow your mind. And they always do it with this delivery, like as though they are waiting for you to applaud or to go like, oh, your edginess is astounding to me. I thought you were so conventional, and here I see that you're much deeper than I gave you credit for. You're so textured as a person. How can I be as liberated as you are?
Yeah.
There are people who really are like bent on letting you know like how sexually open-minded they are. And I'm not again, I'm not saying that like that you can't be that way, but it's like it is typically, here's the other thing. It's typically in my experience, people, you get the sense that they went through the vast majority of their lives either just being like frigid or homely or something. And it's like, so now that they found somebody who will F them, they want to make sure that everybody on earth knows like how much they're getting it on, you know, and single, married, whatever. There's people, they fall into all different categories like that. And I just find it because it's just like, it's because it is just, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say showy, but that's the wrong word. But
yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
No, I know what you mean.
You know, it's like people, you know, if you have to constantly remind me of how interesting you are, you're not really that interesting. And so I think that people who spend a lot of time at like sex conventions and as you said, like sex workshops, it's like, I don't think they have an abnormally high libido. If you have an abnormally high libido, you don't have time or the inclination to go to a convention. You're off effing somebody, probably effing anybody you meet. You know, you're probably just trolling the streets with your penis looking for, you know, any and all comers. You know, you don't really have time to go to a Holiday Inn and sit and have somebody talk about safe words. So, you know, I'm going to wear a blue hanky in my left pocket. You know, hell with that. You're off at a Ramada somewhere just getting bonked.
I mean, I've actually, you know, I've been to some of those workshops and I've, you know, I've
they're just the most pretentious people.
I've socialized, you know, with folks like this, and I've been to parties where interesting things were going on. But the thing is, when they call it a lifestyle, they call it in the lifestyle. They're not kidding. It's
right.
A lifestyle.
I know, and everything's got to be about that. Just like every gathering, every party, every get together,
yeah.
Every buffet they have at their house has got to be about, you know, like, and then we're all going to go out and we're going to F in this huge hammock I just had built for that purpose in the backyard.
And I'd rather just sit around and drink a cup of coffee and talk about movies.
Yeah, that's my thing.
Yeah.
All right. By the way, usually I apologize to Cheryl at this point of the program when we're talking about something horrific or, you know, having to do with bile or pus or, you know, humping.
Which is every day, really.
Really, it is. Today I apologize not just to Cheryl but also to listener Steven, who emailed me yesterday and said, do you work blue on your radio program? And I said, no, sir. And he listed, I won't name them, but he listed some other podcasts that exist. And he said, I'm sure those shows are great. He said, they're funny, they're entertaining. He said, I had to quit listening, though, because his workplace does not allow headphones, I think, as a safety issue. They don't allow people to, I think he works in some sort of a construction place. And he's like, they don't allow headphones. He's like, you have to have speakers on. And he said that he had to discontinue some of the other podcasts that exist out there because his coworkers would hear all the profanity, like real profanity. He mentioned the C word specifically, and he had to discontinue. And he said, so I'd love to listen to the Rick Emerson show. He's like, but do you work blue? And I said, no, my friend. And I actually said, I swear to Christ, it's this morning.
Oh.
I emailed him this morning. It was actually right as I was about to eat some turkey. And I said, we don't work blue. I said, we don't use profanity, you know, and specifically because we have people who listen at work and we don't want to get them into trouble. And I saw this morning his little subscription notice go by that he'd signed up. Now, to be fair, we're not saying anything here that we wouldn't have said on the radio.
We don't use profanity. Our subject matter.
That's right.
Is occasionally.
Mature.
Mature. But we do not use profanity.
For select audiences.
Right.
But you know, no C word anywhere in there.
No, I don't. As we've talked about, I don't know, either here or in private, I don't use the C word even in my private life.
Yes. I use it
on the radio.
I use it enough for both of us, but not here, because I want that guy to be able to listen to this program, alongside his coworkers at lunch while, sharing brisket. Here's Don Taylor.
All caffeinated versions of the controversial alcoholic energy drink 4 Loko are expected to be off retail shelves by December 13th. Adam from Long Island says he's taking advantage of the situation by selling cases of the drink on Craigslist at an inflated price.
A lot of people can't get it. A lot of places are sold out. A lot of people, now that the news is on it, they want to see it. They want to try it. So a lot of those people are going to buy it. And then it's got these people that think it's going to be collectible as well. So those people want to buy it also.
So I wonder if it is a thing that it's legal. It can't be legal to sell on Craigslist, though. I mean, there's no way. You can't sell alcohol. Maybe that's a state-by-state thing. Maybe in New York it is. Because, you know, you can't sell, like, I don't think you can sell guns on Craigslist, for one thing.
No.
Or maybe that's eBay I'm thinking of.
No, it's Craigslist as well. Because I know that when my husband was looking to sell a couple of guns that he had and some ammunition, he asked.
And they said no.
I said, you can't do it on eBay. Maybe you can do it on Craigslist. And I went and looked, and it's like, no, you can't sell guns on Craigslist.
So, I would imagine in Oregon, if you tried to do that, the OLCC would come and they'd have speaks with you about that. Maybe that's a thing that you can do in New York. Because that's, I mean, you know, hey, it's like I got to get that can of 4 Loko, which I feel like now I can never open because it's a collector's item. It's like Billy Beer. It is the Billy Beer of the 21st century.
Well, eventually, because it's an aluminum can and aluminum is to a degree porous, eventually, this is an interesting fact that I know about, eventually it will...
eat through the can?
No, it'll evaporate.
Really?
My grandmother worked on the Goldwater campaign, and she had a souvenir can of Goldwater soft drink, which was actually just... Yes, thank you. Was just ginger ale. In a can that said Goldwater. And she had this can, and she never opened it, and she kept it forever. And eventually, like a couple of decades later, you know, I picked one. It was in a box in the garage.
Right.
I pulled it out, and it was empty. It had just evaporated.
That's weird.
Over time.
That makes sense, actually. I guess when I... How long would that have been? What was the elapsed time, do you think?
Well, that was... Was that the 60s that Goldwater was running? So it would have been about 20 years, probably.
Because, you know, here's the... I was about to say that it's too bad our families never got to know each other. But really, I think the universe would have just collapsed in some nexus of, like, hillbillyism. My grandfather, same one with the Nazi memorabilia, my grandfather was a, I swear to God, a literal card-carrying member of the Beer Can Collectors of America. Because he was classy that way. And it's just what it sounds like. He collected beer cans. And his whole thing was like trying to get one of every beer can, you know, that had ever been made in any country and whatever. And he one of his prized possessions was like a case of unopened Billy Beer or something that he had. And Billy Beer for you kids out there. Bill Carter, who was the, not the author that we've had on the show. We should take great pains right now to point that out. Billy Carter was the younger brother of President Jimmy Carter and was known to be a man who enjoyed his tipple. He enjoyed hoisting a few every now and again. And so he was the Roger Clinton of his day. And so some keen-eyed entrepreneur got with him and licensed his name and his likeness or whatever and actually put out beer called Billy Beer that you could buy. You could buy it in a store. And my grandfather went, that's going to be collectible. And he bought like a six-pack or a case or whatever. And then years later, my grandmother had just gotten rid of the rest of it at some point after he died. But there was one can remaining and it was sealed. Hadn't been opened, and I picked it up anyway, and it was more, it wasn't just empty, it was essentially empty, and that must be what happened to it.
Yeah.
How bizarre. I have no idea.
On a related note, it just occurred to me, I hadn't thought about it in this long time, my aunt and my uncle used to collect the ornamental, like, booze bottles.
Yeah.
Like, Jim Beam would make these bottles, and it's like, you know, it's like a retriever with a pheasant in his mouth, but it's a bottle of booze.
Almost like an Avon decanter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With whiskey, and they had a whole bunch. I was fascinated by those when I was a child. I just thought they were the most interesting things ever. Do they still do that?
Probably.
They still make those?
I would imagine. I think that the market for collectible versions of things, I don't think that ever goes away. It's like,
Dan Aykroyd just, you know, made vodka in a skull. I mean, so occasionally
there
are those things, but specifically like the Jim Beam bottles and the whiskey distillers that made these, like, you know, weird, crazy, elaborate, you know, things of like, you know, a guy in a tuxedo with a top hat and you took his top hat off and you poured the whiskey out of his head and things like that.
They have to do that because there's, you know, people out there that are collectors of that sort of thing. Plus, there's the impulse buy, you know, of like the 21-year-old kid who went like, you know, I'm able to buy my first whiskey. Ooh, it's in a Dachshund, you know, and then he takes it back to the frat house so his boys can see how cultured he is. It's the same reason that they probably even now in 2010 they make vinyl picture discs and colored vinyl because there's some Rob Gordon guy that wants to get it as sort of as an item that is different from everything else. I would imagine, boy, my aunt collected Avon decanters, so my grandfather collected the beer crap, and then my aunt on my mom's side collected the definitive Avon decanter that she had. She's dead, so I have no idea whatever happened to these, if her kids sold them or just threw them away or whatever. But she had a lot of them, and occasionally I wondered, like, if they – such a horribly tacky item. But every now and again I wondered if they might actually be valuable. Because trash or not, they are from a particular era, and it's not like you see them around everywhere. But one was like a big Elvis head. It's a big – and it was fat rhinestone suit Elvis. Big Elvis head Avon decanter. It's like the gaudiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Every year for Christmas, as a child, my mother would provide me with two gifts to give to my father every Christmas. One was a box of chocolate-covered cherries, and the other was a bottle of aftershave from Avon in something like, you know, a car. It looked like the bottle was shaped like
that.
A car.
Okay. Here's the thing. This is the last time I'm going to point this out because it's freaking me out. You got to get out of my head and quit being some weird female version of me with variations on, or I got to quit being some male version of you, I guess, because you're a day or two older. I, of course, being 21. Because every year, because my dad for Christmas wanted the same thing. And in retrospect, I think my dad might have had a little, maybe not OCD, but just had a strange fixation on certain things. Maybe that is OCD. But he had certain like weird ritualistic behaviors. But he wanted exactly the same thing for Christmas every year. It wasn't chocolate-covered cherries. Every year we got him the same thing. We got him a bottle of Old Spice. We got him 2 pounds of peanut M&Ms in the big yellow bag, and then we got him hunting socks. That was the other thing, the gray with the red or orange, the cuff or whatever at the top.
Yeah, the gift to my dad from my mother every year would be a Pendleton shirt, a flannel Pendleton shirt.
Of course.
So that was it. Because that was fancy to spend the extra money for an actual Pendleton shirt.
The name brand
flannel.
And
you had to actually go seek them out. We would usually take advantage of going on a trip to Knott's Berry Farm, and my mother would go into the Pendleton store at Knott's Berry Farm and make my dad go do something else as if he didn't know she was buying him a shirt.
Right.
And then stashing it away for Christmas.
Like she's buying a duck telephone or something.
Yeah. And so we would go into the Pendleton store and pick out my dad's Christmas shirt.
Yeah. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello, and how are you on this fine Thursday? Unbelievably, we've been talking for an hour.
I know.
We have to take a break pretty soon.
Do we?
I don't want to, I'm afraid of saying the P word. That's ironic. I just said P
word. I know.
Wow.
You did.
By trying not to say it, I said it.
Woo!
It's 503-555-6964. Thank you for joining us, I guess. Still to come, we got your Geek Watch. We've done nothing. Your Geek Watch, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, Joy of Christmas. I got this top five.
We've entertained the people. That's what we've done.
That's right, Don. Well, let's do one more brief thing here, then we'll take a break. And on the other side, we'll come back with some of those things.
Let's do the Geek Watch then, because that should be quick.
All right, here's your Geek Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on the...
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Online retailer ThinkGeek is causing a stir with one of its products, canned unicorn meat. The faux spam-like joke product, which was originally a thing on their April Fool's Day release. So it didn't actually exist, but enough people liked it, they started manufacturing it, and you can now find it in their catalog. The product was detained at a German border by customs officials who are considering it meat of a rare animal, which is not allowed
across
the border. Germany.
Okay.
A letter from a customer tipped them off to the international snafu, affirming that the punchline of gag gifts don't always translate. The can, it actually looks like a can of Spam. It says unicorn meat on it. If you open the can, it actually has a disassembled stuffed unicorn now inside with X's for eyes.
We were sort of initially disappointed, too, because I think you were rooting for some actual meat product.
I was hoping it was Spam with a different label on it so you could open it up. You could actually eat it.
You could actually serve it to people. Instead, it's a stuffed animal that's been taken apart. I will say this: the attention to detail on the stuffed animal is impressive, because at the cross sections, it's got like the little, it's got like the cross section of bones,
where it's been cut apart. Where the legs have been removed and such. Yes, this isn't the only hiccup in the history of the product, which is currently sold out on ThinkGeek.com. Since its release in April, the gelatinous, sparkly, meatless creation, which they say that, but obviously they don't know what it actually is because it's not actually Spam. It's been under fire for one thing or another. In June, the National Pork Board slammed ThinkGeek with a cease and desist order, citing the company was poaching their trademark slogan with a tagline, "The New White Meat." The company was even targeted by animal rights protesters who were outraged at the idea of another canned animal product.
And, by the way, I'm looking right here, and if you look at page 18 of the new ThinkGeek catalog, which just arrived yesterday, by the way, it says that it's in stock, but you said it is sold out, which doesn't surprise me because every year – here's the thing about ThinkGeek. I don't think they contrive it, but every year ThinkGeek has a couple of those like Tickle Me Elmo type things that just like everybody in the culture latches onto and you just can't find them. So this year, yeah, it's unicorn meat, and then there's a huge like sunburst thing, and it just says, "For real, no fooling this time." But it is actually sold out. Right next to it, they sell – I had two different people send me this yesterday. This catalog must have arrived at everybody's house at the same time. A large – it's hard to even describe this. It's just – it's like a big plushy doll, like a toy, but it's just a big plushy strip of bacon.
Oh, he's adorable.
With big googly eyes. He's saying,
"I'm bacon."
Yeah, you squeeze him and he says, "I'm bacon."
Oh.
How cute is that?
We need one of those.
Yeah. Adorable talking bacon instills a love of every geek's favorite food. And it's called My First Bacon Talking Plush.
That's delightful.
It's delightful until you give your kid this when he's one. And then when he's five, he sits down at the breakfast table and he says, "What's this?" And you go, "It's bacon. Eat it." And then, you know, and then he has to run back upstairs to check his drawer to make sure the toy's still there.
There was a rerun of The Simpsons the other night, and it's the one where Homer is sitting at the table with the family. He's telling Bart that, you know, "I'm the father and you'll do what I say. Now butter your bacon. Dad, butter it." He butters the bacon. Now bacon your sausage. "Dad, my heart hurts."
It's awesome. Good times. It is what it was sold out last year was the brownie pan, the all edges brownie pan. Okay, so that's in stock. They're not going to get caught, with their pants down again this year. They got more of the. But you know what they've added? Here's the thing: they've augmented. They now sell an all edges lasagna pan.
I've always wanted one of those brownie pans, but every time I go to buy one, they're like $30.
Yeah.
And I just can't, you know, it's like, I remember Alton Brown talking about this on Good Eats once, not ever wanting to have anything in the kitchen that's a unitask. A thing that's only good for one thing. And then like $30 for a pan that's just to make the brownies with you. I don't make brownies often enough that it really feels worth it for me to invest in a special edges pan.
Especially when you consider the fact that at most it ought to cost double a regular brownie pan.
Yeah.
I would probably
go $12.
Yeah.
That's what I would pay.
No.
You know, but 30 is just no.
No, it's like that adorable whale can opener. You know, it looks good, but you know, it's just too much. All right, there's your Geek Watch for Thursday.
"By Grandstar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you."
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Straight ahead, we got your Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, Joy of Christmas coming up. And we will also get to today's top five songs that I have listened to relentlessly following a breakup in my life, or following breakups, I guess, sort of an aggregate list. So we'll get to that later on, and so forth. The Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you by a series of fine business partners, including Sorrell's Vintages. You can find out more about them by finding them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That's where you go. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Now, somebody asked me if they have a webpage. They do not. And in a sort of a weird, I don't think he's a Luddite, but he has kind of a great sort of purist attitude. Daniel, who's the owner, he just says, first of all, that the stuff, especially in the vintage side, they get new stuff in stock like literally every single day. And he's just like, he's like, I would either have to hire somebody to constantly be updating the photos, in which case I would have to then pay for that by raising prices. And he said, you know, and plus it's just too much work. Plus people really, if you see that stuff, the mid-century modern, if you go and you look at it, it's beautiful. But then it's like it sounds so weird, but it's like if you just feel furniture that is of a certain era or of a certain quality, like you can just tell. It has nothing to do with the weight. It has nothing to do with, like, sometimes it is not even really the way it looked. It's just something in the texture of it. There's some intangible property where you can feel that something is well made, or that it was, you know, that it was not just churned out by some Southeast Asian factory. You know, they just put like 5 skillion of them on a boat and sent them, over to be pawned off on gullible fools at a Walmart. You go to Sorrell's Vintages at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, you're going to see what I'm talking about there. This really is beautiful furniture. Furniture, home decorations. Is it correct to say housewares? Or is that like a spatula and ladle kind of a thing?
Housewares would be all of your
like an
smaller
ashtray.
An ashtray, I think, could count as housewares.
And it sounds weird to say an ashtray, but I mean,
do they have barware? You know, like
they do.
So there you go. You'd say housewares.
We're just going to go to that. It's like if you it sounds straight to you. They have this ashtray that. It doesn't, sometimes even if you don't smoke, it's like, everybody had like the grandmother or whatever that had like the cool ashtray in her 1960s ranch home or whatever. You know, my grandmother had. On Pete Campbell's house on Mad Men, if you look at the apartment where Pete Campbell lives, he has that series of 3 wood carvings against the back wall, and it's like a zebra or a deer or something, but it's like an abstract made of carved, polished pieces of wood that are put up. Anyway, but it's a series of 3 panels containing 3 wood carvings, and it's sort of like almost like stills of a zebra or something walking, or a deer like leaping or something. So my grandmother had like exactly that same thing. They don't have that. They have something that is very similar to that at Sorrell's. And so that was blowing my mind. And then I turned and I looked, and I swear to God, there was an ashtray that my grandmother had. And then they had this clock that was, it could be the one from my boyhood home for all I know. It was the weirdest thing. But then they had barware as well, and just some of the coolest looking stuff. And you go by and you check this out. If you are, maybe you've moved into your first real house, you're owning a house for the first time, or you got a great apartment, or you just, you've been sort of picking and choosing things very carefully over the years to decorate the place where you live. I'm telling you, you cannot go wrong in this place. And if you walk in there, and if you look around and nothing in particular strikes you as being just right, the strike your fancy or something's the wrong size, the great thing about Sorrell's is because they are constantly getting new merchandise because they don't stock duplicates unless they happen to somehow find 2 of the same thing somewhere. So you can go back every month. It's going to be different every time, and yet it's all going to sort of fit together because it's from the same era. The other side of the store, we should talk about that as well, especially with the holidays coming up. The other side of the store is all new merchandise, and it's smaller merchandise. I almost want to say stocking stuffers. I mean, it's not just that, but that helps to explain it. A lot of things under $25, some things under $5 as well. And again, it's all beautiful. It's all interesting. And if I can just make this distinction, and you know what I'm talking about here. It's just, and it's not tacky. That's the other thing about Sorrell's. I mean, a lot of even the smaller stuff that you might be tempted to call. I made very sure never to use the words Nick and Knack together when I was talking to him because they're not that. But it's, smaller collectible items, and they're just, they're fantastic. You just take my word for it, and then go there. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, crossing the Baghdad Theater or next to Powell's. They're a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program. Be sure to tell me you heard about it here, won't you please? Sorrell's Vintages.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Always together as one. pain all worried it was dry. Suddenly she grabbed the knife, oh, and slowly walked into their room. Lori, she stabbed him in the heart. Forever they would part. She buried the blade in her throat. Oh, oh, oh. The blood was all around. The end of a perfect love. It dried up in the cold. Oh, oh. Gathered in the heart, forever they would part. She buried the blade in her throat. Oh, 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 oh. The blood was all around. The end of a perfect love. It dried up in the cold.
Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. Hitch up your reindeer, go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. Fill every stocking you find. The kids are gonna love you so. Leave a toy for Johnny, leave a doll for Mary, leave something fruity for Donnie, and don't forget about Gary. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us.
Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto.
It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964.
You know that I know what you will see. Cause that was once me.
Instead of coming, got your Clown Watch, Jenny Watch, Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas. We also got the top five coming up. And these are the top five songs to which I have listened relentlessly following breakups. I know I should have written this down because I'm getting it wrong. I'm saying it differently every time. But you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
All right, so that is all on the way, etc. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will... Well, we actually have multiple guests tomorrow. So tomorrow, which is Friday, that is Friday, December 3rd, 2010, we'll be joined, first of all, by Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, he's looking at the life, work, and legacy of Don Rickles. So that is coming up tomorrow. I'll be talking about Don Rickles. Also, Lisa Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches will be in the studio tomorrow around the same time. They've got a special event coming up that they want to talk about. Hey, and we've – well, not we. So Legion of News – so Legion of News has been nominated for something. This is the thing we just found out during the break, by the way. What is the name of the award or the awards group?
By the way, I just, the half-assed way that I found out this my friend Eric Snyder said, "Hey, we were nominated for this podcast award over at Movie BS with Baron Snyder." And I was like, "Oh, that's actually," he goes, "I don't know what it is, but we're nominated for it." And I said, "Well, that's great." And then just a few minutes ago, Kenny, who works with Greg and Sarah on Fun Employment Radio, posted this thing saying, "We're nominated for this podcast award for best comedy podcast, and we're in the top 10. So come vote for us." And I'm like, "Okay, well, that's nice." So so I just went down. I went, "I wonder if we're nominated." And I'm looking at comedy. No, we weren't nominated. And there's all of these different things: best produced, and cultural arts, and entertainment, and all of these different things. I'm like, "Nope, nobody. Nope, nothing, nothing, nothing." Then I get down to politics/news, and there we are in the top 10.
What?
Legion of News.
There you go. So Legion of News, by the way, so what is the website for this if people want to...
Podcastawards.com.
Is this a fake award? I mean, is this some guy somewhere?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a guy who's he runs a marketing thing for podcasters. I think he's trying to get all these podcasters to pay attention to him because he can help them with their marketing or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think as I mentioned during the break when you were telling me, because I was standing in the door when you said, "Hey, Legion of News got nominated for an award," and I just thought you were screwing with me. I didn't think you could possibly be serious. And you said they were actually ranked ahead of the Dennis Miller podcast.
We are. We are currently we are three slots below Democracy Now, but we are three slots above the Dennis Miller Show.
I immediately have less respect for these awards because they nominated us for something. So
I have a feeling that
Who would have even submitted this?
Probably
Robert Cascadia.
Yeah, probably right. Submitted. You know. All of his top shows, of which we are one.
I wonder if there's anybody who got submitted who did not then immediately rank in the top 10 of some category.
I don't know. But anyway, we are there in the top 10.
All right.
So you can go there to podcastawards.com, and you can vote for the fine folks at Fun Employment Radio as well, and Movie BS with Bear Insider, if you listen to that, because that's a good show. But yeah, go on down to the politics/news section and click Legion of News. And you can vote again tomorrow. You can vote every day.
We urge you now to subvert the electoral and democratic process by fraudulently voting for us thousands of times.
I mean, I just voted for us.
What category is Legion of News nominated in?
Politics/news.
By the way, see, now here's the thing, is I can play both sides of the fence. I wish I had longer fanfare for this segment where we're talking about how glorious we are. Wait, hold on, let me just, there we go. See, I can play both sides of the fence here because on the one hand, we can talk about how, you know, we've been nominated, the award nominated, perhaps even award winning at some point, Legion of News. But then we've got the Rick Emerson Show, which is sort of how Led Zeppelin never won any Grammys, you know, or how Derek and the Dominoes were their records were trashed by Rolling Stone. And be like, you know what, well, this program is really more for the people. You know, we're not for critics. This show isn't about awards. This show is about the common man. This show is about the listener. This show is about the person who is out there working 40, 60, 80 hours a week for their family. It's about that guy, and it's about entertaining him. You know, we're not, I don't really care what the liberal East Coast elite have to say about the Rick Emerson Show, Don. To us, that guy, he's our critic. And all that matters is that we're in his Hall of Fame every day, because those are the real people in the world.
Let's look at the GLBT section of podcasts.
Guns, lard. No, it's not guns or lard, is it?
No, it would be your...
The gay lesbian thing.
Right.
Okay.
Savage Love is nominated. Among the other nominees, shows called Transponder, Scream Queens, Gay Street Beat, and the top two nominated ones so far, if they're putting these in order, are called Cocktails and Cream Puffs, and the number one on the list is a podcast called Bend Over and Take It.
Wow. Hey, subscriber Steven, how's that working out for you there? I hope your coworkers are enjoying this very fine radio program. Thank you. All right, real quickly, just because I can never get enough of talking about me and us, in the news and politics category, in which Legion of News is nominated for. Now, is this best podcast in that category?
Yes.
Okay. So, what are the other? How many nominees are there?
There's ten.
I mean, the
in
top
each category,
ten, right?
Yeah, and so we have Citizen Radio.
Is that number one?
I guess. I don't know if these are list. They're not alphabetical, so I'm imagining
they're current ranking.
Current ranking.
Okay.
Or just how he happened to put them on the webpage.
Interesting.
Because there's no indication of why the list is.
Are these the only 10 for which you can vote in that category?
Apparently so, yes.
So maybe it's not the top 10. Maybe it is just 10. In other words, maybe it isn't like there's 50 and that these are currently the top 10 right now. Maybe this is just the 10 and then he's going to announce the winners.
He picked. When he looked around for stuff.
Because it seems like they wouldn't be ranked right now because that would then remove the suspense of who was going to win.
That's true. So I don't know.
All right. So what are the contenders? Who are our competition?
Actually, I guess it is. Okay, I was confused because of apparently he's alphabetized with the being in T.
Okay.
So I figured it
really?
Out. They are alphabetical.
So it's a class act, really. It's a professional organization all the way.
That confused me, the whole the thing. So,
okay.
Yes. Citizen Radio, Democracy Now!, Electric Politics, FreeTalkLive.com.
Hey, free. I know that guy.
Legion of News, No Agenda, The Bugle, The Dennis Miller Show, The Young Turks, and Wheels Off Liberty.
Okay, I know the Young Turks as well. So here's the interesting thing is that FreeTalkLive.fm, is that what it is?
It says...
Is that what it's called now? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, freetalklive.com.
So Free Talk Live and the Young Turks are both, they might still be, but they were both, at one point did a radio show. So those are both radio shows that might still exist on the radio, but now are also podcasting, or they might have just moved to the net. I actually used to work, I don't know, in the same building as the Young Turks guys. I would see them every now and again. They're from Seattle, I think.
Were they indeed Young Turks?
Not so much.
No.
Am I confused? You know, and they're not to be confused with Shaken and Stirred, which is the radio show where it was Bob Crane's kid trying to peddle his sex videos. This is not them, but it's, you know. Anyway, yeah, so the Young Turks, they were on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK way back in the day. And then Free Talk Live is this guy that's on the East Coast who I've talked to on the phone because he's like a relentless hustler, and I mean that in the best way, where he was trying to get me to carry his show on AM 970. And it's like he's just one of those guys that it's like I just expected him to rappel in one of my windows, you know, because I didn't have any place for the show, and I kept saying, nah, I'm sorry, you know, I don't have a slot for your show, sorry. And he was just, he was never discouraged, he was never downtrodden, he never stopped smiling. He was just like, all right, I'll talk to you again tomorrow. And he called me like once a day for like a year and a half. So good for him. All right, so there you go. So you can go to podcastawards.com. Vote for Legion of News so that we might vanquish our enemies and hear the lamentations of their women.
Yeah, and we do need you to go in, like, I guess every day and vote for us multiple times, because otherwise Dennis Miller's going to win because he has a gazillion listeners.
Or somebody, Thomas Gill, needs to create perhaps some sort of an auto-voting program or algorithm or, you know, or, I don't know, what do the kids make? Did these kids still make worms now, or is it all Trojans?
I don't know.
Well, whatever. We need to make some sort of a thing, some sort of a robot, or a voting, like an autopen of the online awards world that just does nothing but vote for us around the clock.
Yeah,
I mean, hundreds of times a second.
The worst thing that would happen is we'd get caught, and then that would be excellent publicity.
And, ironically enough, it would be news.
It would be.
And we ought to win anyway. Let's just be honest. Can you just... One more time, and then we'll get to the rest of our stuff here on the Rick Emerson radio program, which is awarded, nothing, apparently. You know why? Because it's the people's show, Dawn.
That's true.
Let's read off real quickly with the names of the shows in this category in which Legion of News is nominated for something.
Okay, let me find it again. Citizen Radio, Democracy Now!, Electric Politics, FreeTalkLive.com, Legion of News, No Agenda, The Bugle, The Dennis Miller Show, The Young Turks, and Wheels Off Liberty.
All right, just take yourself out of the equation for a second. View this objectively. View this through the unbiased prism of your journalistic eye. Which of those shows has the coolest name?
Oh, well, us.
That's what I'm talking about.
We have the best name.
Right there. That's it. You know?
And I've listened to Democracy Now!. Boy, it's boring.
I make you a promise.
Dear God.
I make you a promise right now. If we win in the news... And in the news and politics category here, I will do something horrible when I go up to take the award. Like I will mercilessly taunt the losers, or perhaps go over. What if I just went over and just slapped one of the guys who didn't win? Went over and just, where is your God now, Dennis Miller Live? And I just, you know, just cuffed him.
Well, the winners are going to be announced during a live podcast award ceremony on December 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So
wait a minute. So is the ceremony not actually happening? Is this, and I guess this would be appropriate for a podcast award, is it just going to be like out of his couch, but he's going to pretend it's someplace cooler?
He's going to be just sitting there like talking into his webcam on his laptop or something.
Oh, God. All right. Well, in any event, I urge everyone now to fraudulently subvert the process by ensuring our victory in these awards. All right. Awesome. There you go. There's that. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Here's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do that Joy of Christmas watch.
Fantastic. Here's Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas for... Sorry, you just caught me with a mouthful of liquid there. Rick Emerson's Joy of Christmas for Thursday, December 2nd, 2010, right here at the Rick Emerson radio program.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
All right. Just real quick. Here's what I promise. That if we... but it sounds like there's not going to be a physical ceremony that you can attend, because the vow I was going to make is that if we won the award for best news and political podcast at this, this possibly fake award show, I would promise to go up, obviously with you and then take the award. But I, speaking for myself... I promised to keep talking until they had to physically remove me. that I would just continue to go on and on about the glory of us and our program until they had to come and physically take me away from the podium. Not just waving me off, not just playing the, you know, the take me off music, not just turning off the mic. If they turned off the mic, I would actually just start shouting until someone had to come and physically, physically take me away until they have to actually pick me up and carry me from
I
the
like
stage.
That.
So I'll do that if we win. All right. Here's Don Taylor with Joy of Christmas.
While most see the holiday season as one of joy and merrymaking, at least one Hayden, Idaho resident is taking the opportunity to spread a little hate, courtesy of a noose-carrying, KKK hood-wearing snowman on the front lawn.
I was about to ask if he was a Nazi.
Several area parents noticed the offensive snow sculpture located in front of a home on Hillview Drive while taking their kids to school on Wednesday morning.
Is he trying to make it the whitest Christmas of all?
The sculpture depicts a snowman with a pointed hat and an outstretched right hand with a noose in it. Residents in the neighborhood say the homeowners also have an Aryan Nations flag on display. One resident said they were appalled at the nerve they have to threaten people in our community with their signs of hatred, adding this is a season of love and hope, not hate. The homeowner who has the offensive snow sculpture on the front of his home is named Mark. He was profiled by a local news station back in July when he posted flags ranging from an Aryan Nations flag to an SS flag at his home, drawing the ire of his neighbors.
Uh-huh.
Then in October, he angered residents further when, according to his neighbors, he passed out bullets on Halloween. Mark refuted his neighbors' claims, saying he didn't actually pass out bullets. He passed out bullet casings. And he only did so after he ran out of candy.
You know, it's hard to believe that I moved away from Spokane because it is such a cultured and, you know, the many checkered part of the world there. You know, and it, like Hayden Lake is just, it's just one of those places that you, like, you just don't know how it became such a backwater cesspool. You know what I mean? It's not just because it's a small town. There's lots of small towns. I don't know how it is that all of those guys picked Idaho, because they did. It's like Hayden, you know, it's the Hayden Lake, Medellin Falls, you know, Coeur d'Alene. I mean, it's all of those little towns on the, like, the Spokane-Idaho border. It's where all of those idiots congregate. And it's like you just, I don't know if they just all took a vote or if they just, because Florida's like this too. Like, aren't there, no, I'm thinking of Scientologists.
What is Idaho, does it just feel sort of, it's like Montana is the same way. Does it sort of feel like you're separate from the rest of the country because you're kind of out in the middle of nowhere?
Maybe. That's probably true, actually. You know, it probably is easy in Idaho to sort of imagine that you are living in either a different time or in a different place, but probably a different time, you know, back when everyone's, you know, they would know not to speak unless spoken to, and they weren't able to vote and cause trouble. So it probably is easier in a place like Idaho and in the Northwest, let's be honest, because of just the geography and the climate and the way that, you know, and just, the, you know, what with all the nature and everything. It probably is easy to look around if you live in the hinterlands of Idaho and think to yourself, ah, it's 1850 and everything is simpler and I'm by myself in any event. Because that's what draws the Unabomber guy, probably. So he can just think he's living in a technologically stilted society.
And it's easy to hate
right.
the rest of society because you think it's something over there.
You don't have to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He put the snowman on his front lawn about a week ago. His first snowman was smaller, but someone attempted to knock it over. So he rebuilt it, and on Wednesday morning it was about 10 feet tall. He lives about 100 yards away from an elementary school, and several concerned parents called authorities. Two sheriff's deputies went to his home and said there is a statute in Idaho against hanging nooses, which could have led to a criminal complaint if the noose hadn't been removed from the sculpture. The pointed hat on top of the snow sculpture was knocked off, though Mark maintained there's nothing wrong with his sculpture and that it was just a snowman.
Good God. You know, I used to, I'm not anymore, actually, and I'm sort of poorer for it, because it was a dose of comedy that my life sorely needed. I used to be on the mailing list for the Aryan Nations guys, because I did a radio show in Spokane, a talk show, and the weird thing about the area, this sounds bizarre, but the truly strange thing about Aryan Nations guys is that all of the Aryan Nations guys that I ever came into contact with when I was working in Spokane, and, you know, it's not like I would, like, go hang out or something, but it's like if you were on the radio, they would just, like, they would just, it was also before the internet was really, before it had sort of filtered into all the sections of the populace. The internet was ascended at that point, but it didn't really exist the way we have it now. And so in the pre-internet, talk radio was, like, the biggest way to, you know, that people would engage with one another. It was, as Oliver Stone called it, the last neighborhood in America. So if you did a talk show, these guys would, they would find you. They would call you because there would just be big lists of radio programs Xeroxed and passed out of their meetings. And the guys would get told, like, hey, here's a list of local talk shows. Call them so we can get our message out. So if you did a talk show, it was just like a matter of time until you would answer the phone some night. There'd be some Aryan Nations whack job trying to call you and talk to you about mud people. Anyway, so there was this guy, this Nazi named Kurt, that used to call me all the time. And, I mean, not terribly bright. I mean, to such an extent that you almost felt a little sorry for him, because he was, you know, like a just a dumb apple off a dumb, stupid stump of a tree. And his parents obviously were the same way. And it's like, you know, he was not too bright, and so they just indoctrinated him with all this crap. But he put me on his mailing list. And so I just get these Nazi magazines sent to me all the time. And thankfully, they went to work where I was able to sort of explain, like, it's a crazy listener. And everybody at every front desk of every radio station knows the whole thing about crazy listeners. Just like, you know, about, like, listener food and prize pigs. And I said, they're crazy listeners. Because it's like, that shows up to your apartment, and that's just bad news. But I would get, like, the White Aryan Resistance newsletter once a month, and it was fantastic. I mean, not a word spelled right. I mean, there wasn't like a single rule of grammar that they were able to execute properly or with. And if they did, it was just like by accident. It was sort of like a retarded E.E. Cummings. You know what I mean? Not for any stylistic or, you know, aesthetic reason, just because they couldn't figure out how things worked, and so they would just sort of throw a bunch of keys, you know, and letters at the page, and just, you know, just whatever landed, they would just print it. I'll bring it in one of these days so you can see it. It's some good reading. And not unlike The New Yorker, the best part of the White Aryan Resistance, the cartoons. Mm-hmm. Here's Don Taylor. Oh, I'm sorry, is that the Joy of Christmas?
Yeah, it was.
Here's your Joy of Christmas for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show. Were you just squinting angrily at the garbage can?
No, I got used to that clock.
I know.
So I keep looking for the clock. I keep going to look up at the clock. The clock's not there because it fell off the wall.
Well, here's the thing.
So I look, and then I squint because I know the clock's not there, but I keep looking over to see what time it is.
In just a bit, we'll do our second facility break, because there's something we've got to play anyway, and then I'll hang the clock back up.
The only family emergency shelter in Des Moines, Iowa, is the beneficiary. Let's start this over. I pronounced two things wrong in one sentence.
Okay.
The only family emergency shelter in Des Moines, Iowa, is the beneficiary behind a butter sculpture of Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus. Sculptor Sarah Pratt says it's her most challenging and spiritual work yet.
I want it to elicit emotion. I want them to feel something when they look at it.
She's waiting for her laundry to be done.
Pratt says the Holy Family is very different than the kind of characters she's used to sculpting in butter.
I have sculpted Superman and Sean Johnson, Green Eggs and Ham, never Mary and Joseph.
It's part of a fundraiser for an emergency family shelter.
I'm sorry, is it Butter 3?
Yes.
I may not have Butter 3.
Oh, okay.
I may have failed you in that way, Dawn. I'm sorry. Else is there to...
Because nothing really helps people in need
like
better
butter.
Than wasting food.
They love to see that, too. People in other countries especially, they love to see Americans taking food and, like, sculpting things out of it or, like, contesting with it on the 4th of July at Nathan's. Yes, I think I only have the two butter cuts. It's hard to imagine what was left to be learned there. I think she might have given us basically the gist of the story. But this, like, butter is her medium, though? Butter is the substance with which she sculpts always?
I guess.
I mean, do we know any but think about the history of this woman?
No.
Have we seen a photo of the butter sculpture?
I haven't, but I could probably find one.
All right, so you just you should do that. While you're looking up the photo of the butter sculpture, I'm going to take a moment to talk about Castalia Language Center and find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And if you go there, you'll be able to find out how to enroll in language classes at Castalia Language Center, where you can learn Spanish as an adult. And it's different from learning it as a child, because if you learn it as a child... Well, first of all, when you learn something like a language as a child, you're not even really learning it consciously. I mean, you know, people talk it to you, and eventually they talk it to you, is what they do. It is one of those days in some ways, isn't it?
Are they talking it to you?
That's right. I'm getting my, yes, they're going to learn me some Spanish. They speak Spanish to you, and eventually you learn to process it, and you speak it back, and bam, you're done. And you know, in some ways, that is the best avenue for learning a language, is doing it without even being conscious that you were doing it, just having it be a natural part of the conversation. Now, once you get to be an adult, your brain just starts to, it starts to close down certain areas of learning because it figures they're not being used, a reasonable assumption perhaps. But you want to do what you can to keep your brain active and firing on all cylinders, as it were. So you contact Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com. Portlandspanish.com. Portlandspanish.com, where they offer Spanish language classes, small class sizes as well, no more than 8 people to a class, which means you're going to get near individualized attention. And it's going to be people, you know, they're all going to be adults. So you're going to be learning around, you know, the same rate and in the same way. And you will be able to keep your brain operating swiftly, smoothly, and sharply as you approach middle age and your golden years. So that right there is reason enough to do it. You go to portlandspanish.com and talk to Clara Grebel. She is the founder and operator of Castalia Language Center. She's a native Spanish speaker, and she now operates Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. How goes the search for the butter sculpture?
Well, I think I found it, although, man, if you just do a search for butter sculpture, it's kind of frightening.
Really?
You'll actually come up with a lot of...
A copious amount of results?
And a Wikipedia entry that says that it's an art form that was started by Tibetan monks.
Does it say that because you just wrote that into the Wikipedia entry?
No, I didn't have time.
Does it say that the preeminent practitioner of the art is Hugh Jass?
It just said butter sculptures created by Tibetan monks. And then if you look at images, you do an image search, first thing you see, Elvis with his guitar sculpted out of butter.
Okay. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come, we got your clown watch, your Cheney watch, we'll do the top five, and so forth. And we should revisit that Heath Ledger story at some point in the near future, the Nolan story about Batman as well. All right.
Okay.
Here's Don Taylor, ladies and gentlefolk.
A tip from a neighbor led to two drug arrests in Salem. Salem police, they arrested Corey Rada, 23, and Derek Craner, 20, on Monday. Officers said they found 3 pounds of dried and packed marijuana at their home, along with more than 2 ounces of hashish, a small amount of hallucinogenic mushrooms, drug packing materials, 3 guns, and more than $1,000 in cash.
Let me ask you this question about drugs. I don't understand what hash is. What is hash? I have no idea what that is. I mean, I don't know if it's a plant, if it's like a pill, where does it come from? Is it a variation of some other drug?
I'm not sure how it's manufactured. It is it's a similar process to marijuana, except that it's been sort of cooked down, so it's like a very concentrated tar like resin.
Now, is it from marijuana?
That I really don't know. I always assumed it was, but again, I'm not sure of anything anymore, so I could be completely wrong.
All right. Well, fortunately, we're in an area here where this is where the audience lives. We're in their wheelhouse, so they'll be able to clarify that for us. But okay, so they found a huge amount of this drug, which comes from somewhere.
They began investigating after someone called to complain about drug activity at the home and nearby McRae City Park. Salem police say Rada is a medical marijuana card holder, but he was outside of the program's restrictions, both in the amount of marijuana he had and because he was selling to non-card holders.
All right, then.
They've been charged with delivery and possession of controlled substances. One of the reasons I read this story is because their mugshots, in particular one of the two of their mugshots...
Are they fantastic?
...are fantastic, and they have been uploaded to rickemerson.com/pictures.
All right,
so you can see that. I'm also sending the butter sculpture over there.
Thank you.
Now.
I appreciate that. So forth.
Yeah. Pull that guy up and take a look at him. These guys, these Salem drug kingpins, Corey Rada and Derek Craner, just look like geniuses.
You know, my Intertron is running really slowly today for some reason. God damn it. Every time I go to my webpage, I see the picture of an elf that Cheryl created. Thanks. Thanks so much for that. I appreciate
that. Oh, and you never saw the thing I made of you, the dancing Stephen Morgan, either.
No, and I am poorer for it. Wow. Oh, my God. Wow. Those are some great mugshots.
Aren't they great?
Wow. That's fantastic. The guy on the left just looks like your average ordinary thug. You know, like a guy who's eventually going to be covered in jailhouse tats and doing a lot of bench presses out in the yard. This guy on the right, what is his story?
First of all, he looks like a mopey computer geek.
He's got no chin. I mean, it's like there's something there below his lower lip, but it's not a chin. It's just like a sort of a fold.
He is a deeply unattractive young man.
He really is. And then I just enlarged the photograph and the horror is so much more intense. Everything, okay, OMG, oh my God, all right, seriously, you guys, okay, oh my God, here's the thing about this guy's face, okay, I gotta stop, because I'm working myself into a frenzy here, the thing about this guy's face is, this guy on the right, which one do you suppose he is, by the way, do we have the name of this sterling young man?
Rada is the one on the left, I believe, and Craner, who is 20, is the one on the right.
All right, so which one is it?
So Derek Kraner is the really unattractive one.
Who do you suppose is the brains of the outfit?
Oh, it's got to be Rada.
All right.
He's got those little evil shark eyes, but at least it looks like there's some intelligence there.
All right. So if you go
the other guy is obviously his toady.
If you go, he's the stooge. If you go to rickemerson.com/pictures and you go to visual aids for December 2nd, 2010, you're gonna see the album. So it's December 2nd, 2010. Here's the thing about this guy on the right. Everything that could be wrong with his face is. There's no part of his face, and really his neck is no picnic either. I mean, it's like and frankly, his body is probably no cakewalk. But if you start with the neck and work your way up, every single element of his face is they've missed somehow, the creators of this young man. The architect has misjudged or miscalculated or just used substandard parts. Okay, let's start with that. First of all, his ears bend down like he's Sloth from the Goonies. His lips, it's like a really bad collagen job, but he's not a model.
Yeah.
So it's like someone has taken the lips of a trout. You know what he is? He's like an ugly suburban criminal adolescent version of Serpentor, you G.I. Joe guys. Where instead of taking the cunning of Hannibal, and it's like the tactical abilities of Caesar, they've taken like the lips of a trout and the ears of Sloth. Also, his eyes point in different directions. His eyebrows aren't level, and it's not like he's furrowing his brow or something, or trying to give you like an arch Stephen Colbert expression. His eyebrows are just in different places. They're not aligned. Let's see, what else do we have going on? He's got no chin. Yet this is the best picture I've ever seen. Yet at the same time, while he has no chin, the area below his mouth slants at an angle for no reason. Like it's like his head was a candle and it was left on top of a radiator for a while and it just started to sort of list to one side. Also, he's greasy. And just,
well, he was charged with possession while the other guy was charged with delivery and possession. So, like I said, I think he's the toady. I looked at those pictures and my immediate thought is, like, he's the guy, he's 3 years younger than the other guy. He's the guy who's hanging out with the guy who's actually the drug seller.
Right.
Because he thinks that occasionally there will be some girl at some party so screwed up that she will sleep with him. And yet it has never happened because he is so repellent that even drunk girls on, like, a ton of marijuana won't have sex with him.
Hey, Spike, you're the man, Spike. We're going to sell some hash, ain't we, Spike? That's right, Spike. You're always right, Spike. So he's sort of he's enraptured by the attentions of the older individual, and he thinks that he'll get some of those scraps occasionally.
Yeah.
That's not happening. Wow. And then, by the way, just a final thing. You zoom in, and and I have to lean into the screen here, and you look at his alleged mustache, which is like, it was like drawn on with a marker that was on its last legs. Like the marker was just, like one of those, like when you take the pen and you have to shake it to get the ink down to the end. That's what his facial hair appears to have been put on with. Wow. Oh, and he's got some sort of a large mole on his face as well. Just to like sort of spike the ball a bit. Awesome. The other guy just looks like Dan Bozic. All right, there you go. That's that story. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Did I just send you this link? I didn't. I'm going to send you a link. By the way, we won't do it as like a supplemental Geek Watch or anything, but I'm going to send you a link, Don, to normally I would just send you a link to the story itself, but I'm going to send this to your don@rickemerson.com address. It is a link directly to a selection of Google News stories. In other words, I'm linking directly to the results of a Google News search. And I want you to just, when you get this, we'll do it here in a few, but when you just get this, just look through the headlines of the first few stories and see how they are all in direct opposition to one another.
Okay.
There's like three or four different headlines here, and they all seem to say like different things.
And we have the emails crossing each other because while you were doing that, I was sending you a different link to the disco Christmas Stephen Morgan thing that I made that I want you to watch.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, this coming Saturday, it is this coming Saturday, December 4th, from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m., Don Tigler and myself, along with Cheryl Kanakoa, Bruce Agler, we're going to be at Christmas Mountain Trees. We are going to be located, we're going to be, they're located at, the thing. Their website is achristmasmountaintrees.com. Uh-huh. I mentioned this earlier on in the program, yes, but I want to make sure that we are mentioning it in its totality.
They're in Scappoose.
They are in Scappoose. You can find the driving directions at christmasmountaintrees.com, and you can find the weather updates at facebook.com/christmasmountain. And we're going to be there selecting Christmas trees for our own places of residence as well as the break room. We'll be doing that this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And if you would be interested in obtaining one of their trees your own self, you can enter to win one of those by sending an address, sending an email to tree@rickemerson.com, just like it sounds. It is tree@rickemerson.com. So we're going to be giving away five of those. The only requirement is you got to be able to pick it up on Saturday, December 4th, from 9 till noon. So that is this Saturday, 9 till noon, you got to be able to pick it up. But if you meet that requirement, you just send an email to tree@rickemerson.com. And again, you can find out more about Christmas Mountain Trees by going to their website at christmasmountaintrees.com or facebook.com/Christmas Mountain. At the news desk, here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Cheney Watch.
Excellent. Here is your Cheney Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby.
Here is Don Taylor with your Cheney Watch for Thursday.
Business Week reports that Nigeria is planning to charge Dick Cheney with bribery over accusations that Halliburton spent $180 million bribing Nigerian officials in order to win a $6 billion natural gas contract. Cheney was the company's CEO between 1995 and 2000. While several other foreign companies are also being charged, KBR and Halliburton agreed to pay $579 million in February 2009 for bribery payments in Nigeria that stretched from 1994 to 2004.
But, I mean, let's be honest. If you were trying to get if you were trying to get the fix in with some other nation, you'd go right to Nigeria.
Yeah.
I mean, like, who are we? Who's kidding who here? Who are we fooling? I mean, that's everybody would pick Nigeria. That's if you were like, look, I got to bribe the heads of the government of some foreign country. I mean, where's it going to be the easiest? Right there.
And if your budget for the thing is $6 billion, I mean, you know, $579 million is just a drop in the bucket.
That gets
really
you a lot in Nigeria, too. I mean, it's the exchange right there is fantastic.
The news was first reported in Lagos's Guardian newspaper, and Nigerian officials say they plan to file charges in the next 3 days. Godwin Obla, prosecuting counsel at Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, added that Cheney's arrest warrant will be issued and transmitted through Interpol, the police organization that recently filed a warrant for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
Excellent. By the way, somebody has clarified the business of the nomination in the award, the podcast awards. They did an open nomination thing a while back, and Greg and Sarah mentioned it on Fun Employment. I nominated them and you nice folks, and I'd imagine many other listeners did the same. And then he follows it up by saying, hash is from marijuana. Yes, indeedy. So there you go. That's the Rick Emerson audience at work. Fantastic. And there's your Cheney Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. So we're gonna do a break number two here in just a second, and then on the other side we may or may not get to your clown watch today, but we got the top five to get to, which after so much the build up and preamble at the beginning of the show, like we sort of got to do that. I will do this second break here following this Heath Ledger thing, which I sent you, because we touched on this in Legion of News, and it triggered a whole like cavalcade of thoughts that I wanted to get to. But it all sort of this is the point upon which the inverted pyramid of stuff kind of rests. So we got to do this first. Then we'll take a break. We'll come back with the top five and more. Here is Don Taylor.
Okay. But we're not talking about this.
We are.
Okay. Yes, you sent me the Google stuff.
All I've seen is sort of the headlines. Like, I haven't seen any of the...
Well, I mentioned the story in Legion of News that Christopher Nolan has announced that the next Batman movie, Dark Knight Rises, will be the final Batman film for him and for Christian Bale. And that they have a good relationship with Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers did well by him with Inception. And he's happy to, like, without any pressure to perform, to be able to, like, do the movie he wants to do, etc. So we started talking about the whole, there had been some discussion about whether or not Nolan was going to be inserting a digitized Heath Ledger into the movie in some fashion or other.
And to be fair, the only thing, I mean, and I guess it was on Ain't It Cool, so it's like you take everything there with a grain of salt because they'll just sort of report anything from anybody. But it was phrased in a way that made it sound like, I mean, it was either an actual inside source or it was somebody who really knew how to make themselves sound as though they were in the loop on this sort of thing. And what I read yesterday is that, because I didn't see, and I wasn't even sure that Nolan was doing the third one, because he was being sort of, I don't know, he was being a little cagey about it for a while. Like, he was just saying that he wouldn't, you know, he was kind of, he didn't really say anything at first publicly because he was making it, I thought it was a negotiating tactic. It didn't sound like he was on board with it, definitely. But so he is, it's him and at Bale, and I guess it's the final time for both of them. And then this source said that they were going to use a combination of CGI and then like Heath Ledger stuff that he filmed, but that, you know, that was on the cutting room floor to give a final appearance for the Joker, to some sort of a sense of closure, so that you didn't just – so that you just weren't kind of left hanging, like wondering, like, whatever happened to that guy or, you know. Because it's all set in the same universe, and presumably the new Batman film is going to take place after The Dark Knight. And so people weren't going to be asking, well, like, where is the Joker? Isn't he running around somewhere? And so this was, I guess, going to be used to sort of clarify all of that. And I saw this smattering of headlines, and I haven't really had a chance to look deeper into the article, so I sent them to you. But it looks as though Nolan is quoted, like, back-to-back in different articles saying fundamentally different things about whether it's true.
And it did appear that way at first, but actually, if you slow down and read the headlines more carefully, it's like, Heath Ledger footage won't be used in a Batman film. The next, Christopher Nolan says Heath Ledger will not appear in the Dark Knight Rises. Christopher Nolan confirms no Heath Ledger. It's like that no. So he did give a... he did do an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, I guess, yesterday, and he said that, no, there will not be any Heath Ledger footage.
So I wonder if that was – because they had to have asked him about it, right? I mean, that's a thing where you got to figure that Warner Brothers, they must have just – I don't see – unless he has final cut over the film, which he might. I mean, that's the thing. It might be ultimately his decision, because just from a marketing point of view – you know, Ledger was, you know, and I mean, I was obviously exacerbated by, you know, by his death. But I mean, even if he had not died, the Joker was the most interesting thing and the biggest selling point, the most readily identifiable visual hook for Batman. He was such a massive draw. And again, because of the death and the Oscar and the whatever, he would, by definition, be such a massive draw for this film that it almost, if Nolan really doesn't want him in the film, then by definition, it means that Nolan must have final cut, because otherwise there is no way that they would let him off the hook with that. They would
probably
force
not
him to do it.
Well, the Hollywood actually wasn't – one piece said it was an interview, and in a different story it says it was at an awards ceremony party on Tuesday for Inception. So I'm assuming Inception must have gotten nominated for an Independent Spirit Award or something. But the Hollywood Reporter asked him about the report on a New Zealand website, saying that Nolan and Warner Brothers were thinking about inserting unused footage of Ledger as the Joker in the movie. His wife and producing partner, Emma Thomas, said, "I heard the rumor. We're not doing that." And then Nolan also denied that Ledger would show up in the film. He said the script isn't even completed yet, and he believes that Ledger's performance in the film should just stay there.
I just don't know. See, that's one of those things where it's like if it went well, it would be the best thing ever. Like if they were able to do it in a way that didn't feel exploitative. And Nolan doing it, I think that imprimatur alone would almost not make it. I mean, you'd feel okay about it.
Yeah.
You know, like if it was, you know, it's Joel Schumacher or some, you know, Michael Bay or some dick just comes and just shoves him into the film. Then you go, it would just feel like a cheap gag.
But then again, once it's already been out that it's happened and that they're going to do it, it really, I could see as a director not wanting to do it purely because your audience is going to be sitting there
waiting for it
to happen. And it's going to take away from, you know, the pacing of the film as a whole.
You'd almost have to open the movie with it. I mean, that's the thing, right?
It would probably have to happen very early on just to get it over
with. It would be like, just everybody in the audience waiting for the band to play the hit single or something. You know, like you're just waiting for Blind Melon to play No Rain so you can leave. They would almost, it would have to be like almost the opening image of the film just to dispense with it and get it out of the way. But I see what you're saying is it would freight the film with just so much unwieldy expectation that there'd probably be no way for the, you know, the film couldn't even move under the weight of all that,
And then you'd have to be, like, really super careful about what the circumstance was that you used it in. And not just that, but, I mean, how you framed it within the film, what came before it and what came after, because it's just going to be a gimmick that's going to just – it is going to take everybody out of the film.
The only reason that I would do it if I were Nolan, well, A, again, I think if it was done well, it might almost work. But as you pointed out, the only that is almost predicated on nobody seeing it coming. And maybe that's what he's doing. Maybe he's doing something. You know, I'm creating just like elaborate conspiracies in my head. Maybe he's doing like a rope-a-dope thing of, no, that's not going to happen. And then it happens.
What I would do if I was him at this point, particularly since the rumors have already been around and he's already shot them down, what I would do is I would not use any image of Heath Ledger in the movie, but I would set a scene in Arkham Asylum, and I would have you hear him laughing down at the end of the hall.
Oh, that creeps me out. Oh, yeah. That's great. Now, see right there. That's the win. That's how they ought to do it. That's threading that needle. And the great thing about that is that if he didn't say anything, if it was just the laugh, you know, the great Joker laugh, then it's like if you weren't really looking for it, you might not even notice it. And it might register it almost subconsciously, or it might be just underneath the radar enough that it's not going to take you out of the picture. But it's a little bit of aural coloring.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of detailing in the edges. That's good. See, okay, you're on record as having said that now. So if they do that, that's your idea.
Okay.
That's the best way to do it. Because then you're splitting the difference. It's the best of all possible worlds. The only other reason to use actual footage of him, apart from box office draw, if you're Nolan, is to, and it probably wouldn't even work, is to just stop somebody else from doing it. You know, like if you just use up the stuff he's got, then it just, you know, it prevents them from doing it in the future. But I guess it doesn't because they could just flat out CGI it, which, as you pointed out with is it Olivier? And I'm thinking of Sky Captain. You were talking about
Gladiator.
Gladiator, where it's just, you know, it's just
Oliver Reed.
So poorly sometimes, and it just sort of like, it's really jarring, just makes your brain hurt. All right, excellent. That's a fantastic idea.
Thank you.
On that note, so I was going to play a little something based on that when this story came up in Legion of News, and I said, oh, my God, have you heard this thing? So we'll take the break here. We come back. I get a few more stories out of the way. We'll do the top five, and then everybody will be left to their own devices for the remainder of the evening. Don't forget, joining us tomorrow, Lisa Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches, getting ready to celebrate an important anniversary for those guys. I think it's going to be their first. I think it's going to be the first anniversary of their opening the business. I think the maybe the 18th? I think it's the 18th is the anniversary. So it's going to be a little shindig for that. So we'll talk to Lisa Wood about that and about how things are going for those guys. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here with another installment of comedy.
Bring a sandwich, too.
See, I don't say that because I feel bad. Because I said that jokingly last time, and then she really looked regretful, and she said, oh, my God, I didn't even think to bring. I'm so sorry. And I had to clarify that I was kidding, and I just felt like an ass. So I'll let you pick up that baton because I don't.
No, I'll just send her a message on Facebook or something and say, hey, looking forward to see you. Feel free to bring a sandwich.
All right. But that's a sandwich, singular.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, we can split one of those. They're huge.
I'm saying I can't have it, though. It's like my lips couldn't even touch it. I would just be plagued with Catholic guilt. Okay. It would be.
Then it's one sandwich for me and sandwich for you.
I'm just. I mean, the weed of leeching bears bitter fruit, Dawn. So I just it's a thing I can't consume.
And I'm going to be passing over some cookies to her to sell in her store, possibly. So, you know.
But that's what makes it acceptable for you because it's a little, you know, it's a little quid pro quo. It's an equitable split between the two of you. Jim Willig will be doing another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 tomorrow, talking about the life, career, and legacy of Don Rickles. All right. That is all coming up later on in the program and tomorrow, respectively. Before we do anything else, though, we will take this little break, and the break is going to consist of a piece of music. I asked you last hour if you had heard the most recent and, according to Ruben, the final Johnny Cash album. And, I mean, you know, there's going to be probably collections and anthologies and, you know, whatever. But this is what Ruben says is the final collection of new music. In other words, recordings that had not been heard by anybody. Because Cash did the whole series of American records. And so American Six came out, I think maybe July of this year, like, I don't know, 5 months ago or something. And because of the Heath Ledger thing, we talked about, you know, when you do it right, you know, when you're able to sort of, when you can handle those posthumous releases or appearances correctly, I mean, it really sort of, it both subverts itself and becomes an overarching representation of itself. I mean, it just works on any number of levels. And Rick Rubin, who is really one of the most talented producers, you know, the music has ever seen, and has done an especially great job with Johnny Cash stuff. When you consider the fact, and that it also, this is not only the final record of new Cash stuff, but it is the first new record to come out since he died, because he died right after a release, and then they did, like, I don't know, like a 3-disc set or something, but most of that had already come out. This is the first collection of new material since Johnny Cash died a couple years back, and again, it's the, you know, it's the final thing he's going to put out. This song is so, it is so fantastic and manipulative all at the same time, and it's like where you're aware that you are being manipulated, but it's done so well and like so skillfully. You are being manipulated just by the hands of a master, you know, when it comes to Rick Rubin, that it's acceptable. And also, as we were talking about with I guess it was Big Jim when we were doing the top five, and Johnny Cash, Man in Black was on there, and I was talking about how Johnny Cash is almost alone. Not entirely alone, but almost alone among musicians, in that he was able to create his own myth while he was still alive, and it didn't come off as like hokey or cloying or weird, and strangely enough, it didn't come off as self-aggrandizing, which it would have like with anybody else. Because look at guys like Bono, where it's so easy to view them as being just vast, overblown parodies of themselves, and Cash somehow avoided that, even as he was in the process of making his own myth. One side road on the way to actually playing this song, I read the first review yesterday of the Coen Brothers' True Grit, where they just, I mean, they just like lost their S over it. I mean, they just, it was like the second best film of their careers, like after Miller's Crossing, and it was just, and it had obliterated the original True Grit like in every way possible, which I think we probably knew was going to be the case. When I saw the trailer for True Grit, the new version of, there's that Cash song they cut it to, you know, that's the sort of thing that would, that right there is, it's like, that's almost the sort of thing you would figure the Coen brothers would avoid, because Cash runs the risk of just being such a cliche at this point, but he miraculously like avoids it somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about it on this show or if I talked about it on the Ham-Fist Radio, my sort of dislike of remakes.
Right.
And the thing is, there is an exception for, you know, that I will make in some cases, and with the Coen brothers doing this, they're not remaking the original True Grit movie.
Right.
They are making another movie from the book,
right,
True Grit.
Right.
And that's a completely different situation entirely. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's like, you know, good for you. I mean, you're going back to the original source material and doing another interpretation of it. And it's like, and I can't wait. Personally.
It looks, I mean, I've seen that trailer, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 times, and it's just, it looks fantastic. It just looks astounding. And I run so hot and cold on the Coen brothers, but anyway, so on the subject of death and posthumous works and releases and myth-making and legends and so forth, this is the lead-off track to the final Johnny Cash record, and again, the first record to come out after his death. It's just, this is one of those things that shouldn't work, because you should just roll your eyes and just, you know, at just the shamelessness of it. But it, amazingly enough, does work. Back after this, we got more on the way, including the top five and whatnot. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, I'm gonna rise right out of the ground. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look way down the river, and what do you think I see? I see a band of angels, and they're coming after me. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, look down yonder, Gabriel. Put your feet on the land and sea. But Gabriel, don't you blow your trumpet till you hear from me. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. Jesus, meet me in the middle of the air. And if these wings don't fail me, I will meet you anywhere. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. Well, meet me, mother and father. Meet me down the river road. And mama, you know that I'll be there when I check in my load. Ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Jimmy, I just came back from a lovely trip along the Milky Way. I stopped off at the North Pole to spend the holiday. I called on old dear Santa Claus to see what I could see. He took me to his workshop and told his plans to me. Now, Santa is a busy man. He has no time to play. He's got millions of stockings to fill on Christmas Day. You better write your letter now and mail it right away, because he's getting ready, his reindeers and his sleigh. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees when you are sleeping. He knows when you are awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Tomorrow, again, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be joining us, as well as Lisa Wood. And returning to the program on Monday, Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian, will be here. So he's been on, I guess, paternity leave. And then it was, you know, Thanksgiving and holidays and et cetera, et cetera. So on Monday, we will be rejoined at long last by Mr. Ryan White. Top five coming your way in just one moment. Let's do a couple more here with Don Taylor before we roll that your way.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
By the way, I fixed the clock.
Oh, I see it.
Sort of.
It's not, you know, actually hanging on the wall, but
it's not where it ought to be, but it's, I've sort of just set it on the whiteboard tray, because now at least it's in your field of vision.
It's or thar.
You know, it's sort of more or less where it needs to be. Because, yeah. You know, the stupid thing is, I'm wearing a watch. I mean, there's a watch right there on the hand that I was actually using to point to the space where the clock needs to be. Has a watch on it.
And you have three laptops facing you, each of which has the time on it.
Well, it's just not... All right, here's Dr. Taylor.
An 11-year-old boy is recovering after being shot in the face by a 13-year-old girl in White Rock, Oklahoma. It happened on Monday night in the town of White Rock, near the town of White Rock in Lincoln County. Detectives said they believe the girl that shot the boy, who was his neighbor, did not intend to hurt him. They said the boy is lucky to be alive. Deputies said two brothers stole their parents' gun out of a safe and went for target practice. The boys found the key to the safe, and their father didn't know. Investigators said the boys brought two friends along with them, a 13-year-old girl and her brother, who was six. The boy set the gun down, and the detective said the teen girl picked it up and pointed at the 11-year-old's face and pulled the trigger.
God damn.
He's very lucky, you know. It was a .22 caliber rifle, said Lincoln County Sheriff Charlie Dougherty. The entrance was right there below the lip on the left side, exited right through the jawbone. Originally, police said the boys lied about what happened and told their parents the 11-year-old had fallen on exposed nails. Police said after detectives questioned them, the truth came out. Dougherty said the teen girl came forward at school and told the principal what had happened. Investigators questioned the parents, and they said they believed it was all just an accident. As far as this case, I don't see how mom or dad could have done anything different, said Dougherty. The district attorney will decide whether or not to press charges.
Oh, kids and their zany gun games. By the way, many responses coming into the mugshots of the quote, Salem kingpins, including, by the way, a comment that just says, you are not allowed to use Salem and kingpin in the same sentence. Somebody says, it's like his mustache was drawn on with a really sharp pencil on the left side, but the pencil got dull by the time he finished the rest of his face. Or like he's some sort of, like, it's like he's a dollar store version of that guy from the Backstreet Boys that just has the mascara mustache, you know, like the Hollywood Hulk Hogan mustache that's just been drawn on. All right, shall we roll the ugliness?
Let's do it.
All right, here is
Lord.
That's what I'm saying. See? Do you see now why it seemed like it might have been a good idea last night, but then by the time this morning rolled around, it was of negligible value, and then by the time we got ready to go on the air, it just seemed like a thing that I never should have been allowed to put together.
So, was the honorable mention song so horrible that you decided to just remove all of it except for one letter to make me guess what it is?
Does it actually not, does it have not the entire thing?
No.
Let me just, let me look here. Let's say, all right.
That maybe it was just trying to.
No, that was me. I was just trying to make things difficult for you. I'll get you an updated version of that as soon as I do this.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
It's sort of like idle hands where my fingers just wouldn't obey me. They didn't even want to type it for you. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is your top five for today. Are you glad I put that there? You get to hear that now?
Yeah.
These are the, and one of these songs, I'll tell you this, actually, it is the number one song. That's the one that I heard yesterday while I was driving.
Oh, okay.
And it got me thinking about a whole, you know, a whole genre of song in my head. So these are the, top five songs which, taken as a whole, aggregated over my many, many years on planet Earth and my many, 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 many failed relationships. These are the songs to which I would brood, sulk, mope, wander around the house like Caesar, just wondering about, you know, about this cruel thing called life after a... And when I say a breakup, but it was just after, like, some girl dumping me. I mean, that's really what it was. A breakup makes it sound like it was sort of mutual or that we both brought the... Look, you've said things. I've said things. We've laughed. We've loved. We've learned. It really wasn't that. It was like I would just come home and there's a note like, you are a dick. And everything was gone. So, there you go. Or her friends were there packing sometimes, like, because she didn't want to see me. So that she would just send friends over to get things for her. That was always fun. When I answer the door and... You know, it's like, hello, hi. Hey, have you seen Patty? Oh, Patty's not coming back ever again, Rick. Hey, I've got a bag. Could I just come in for a second to get her things? That was a lot of fun. So, there you go. You have to do this list next week.
Oh, I will.
Okay.
I will.
These are the top five songs to which I would brood following a breakup. Don Taylor, what's our honorable mention today?
Honorable mention is Motley Crue.
That's right.
You're All I Need.
What do you need to hear beyond Motley Crue, though? I mean... So here's the great thing about this song.
Uh-huh.
I should say first and foremost, I really do like this song. Quite sincere, I'm a big Motley Crue fan. I'm unashamed of that. I have never wavered in my love of the Crue. It is so typical of not just me, but like guys, and specific like late adolescence, like late teenage years guys, that this is the song. Not like a Without You or like a... You know, like a Nona, you know, maybe sort of a more traditionally romantic song. This, of course, is a song about a guy who doesn't want his girlfriend dating anyone else, so he kills her and puts her in the deep freezer in his, like, basement. And I think the song is actually some from the point of view of, like, he's already been arrested and he's sitting in jail. But he doesn't regret it. Because, like, you know, she stuck close to home after that.
In, like, just one or two quick sentences... What breakup inspired this song?
How do you mean in one or two sentences?
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, we don't have time for you to give the whole background on every single one of your breakups. But I'm just thinking, just kind of put us in perspective, like, you know, what happened here that...
This was actually from more than one breakup, but I think they were all when I was in high school. And when you're in high school, it's like... And I'm not knocking this because it is, I think, to some degree a chemical thing in your brain. And also just high school is a really, adolescence is just an effed time.
Yeah.
Being a teenager just sucks. It's just terrible. And I know that there's, you're doing certain things for the first time and taking your steps into adulthood and, you know, finding your path in life. That's all true, but that doesn't, so what? Like, that doesn't change the fact that the sum total is suck.
Yeah.
And everything as a result seems so much more dramatic than it might. I'm not going to say that it really is, because, you know, when you're going through it, it is that dramatic. If it's true to you, it's true. But when you're an adult, you know, you break up and it sucks. But when you're an adolescent, it's like everything good is the best thing that's ever happened. Everything bad is the worst moment of your life.
Yeah.
And so I had
to... And no one on earth has ever felt pain like you're feeling.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, these mortals with their lives and their love, they know not of these things such as I know. You know, and you're, you know, it's like you picture yourself as Ronnie James Dio on a mountain raging at the heavens for this cruel fate that has been thrust upon you. And so a song that is sort of, because if you listen to the song, it, you know, it sounds like a power ballad. It's kind of sweet and sort of wistful, and it's got a, it's sort of pretty in a power ballad kind of way. You know, make you only mine. You know, but then if you perceive yourself to be a dark, brooding, edgy young man, you know, who walks in a different path than the rest of humanity, then this song really appeals to you because it furthers your own perception of yourself as deep, and also when you're a teenager, you're just pissed off about everything all the time. So it's not like it's outside the realm of possibility that, you know, 1 in 100 guys go, that is a great solution to a breakup. Honey, where are my knives? You know, so. Anyway, and I was just a huge Motley Crue fan anyway, and so it was a sort of, before the internet, it was a little bit of a secret society of people we felt like, because this album was a big hit, this is the album that had Girls, Girls, Girls on it and whatever, and so, but we felt like if you were really a hep cat, like you would be in the know about what this song was really about,
wow.
You know, and so it was sort of like a wink and a nod and a, uh-huh, yeah, freezer. Freezer. All right, these are the... Do you see why I regret this whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
These are the top five songs to which I would brood following a breakup when I was a younger man. Don Taylor, what is number five?
Number five is Cinderella. Don't know what you got till it's gone.
That's right. Truer words were never spoken. What? What is that look? Yes?
Bands like Cinderella allow guys to be girls.
Okay, you should write that down because that's fundamentally brilliant. You've really gotten to the core of it right there. I have to say, you'll hear this statement repeated many, many times. However long it is we spend together, you'll hear me say variations on this a lot. But I really am unashamed of my love of Cinderella too. It's not like I just accept whole cloth everything from this genre or from this era. There's a lot of it was bad. I mean, the '80s were just terrible by and large. But there are, you know, but there's a large section of the, you know, the kind of hair metal genre that I to this day enjoy quite a lot. And Cinderella is one of those bands. I love me some Cinderella. The thing about this song is, like, it is so easy to be dismissive of stuff like this and to smirk and to laugh. And I do it too. But it's, like, such a basic, simple statement that it is both fundamentally absurd and, like, irrefutably true. You know, and that's the sort of thing. That's the weird double-edged sword of it. Is like you can make fun of it because of its obvious, overwrought nature. But you've had the breakups where it's like trying to describe a dream to somebody else, and they don't get why it was so interesting. But it's like when you're in the dream, it's just unbelievably interesting. Well, when you're in the breakup, like it is just like you're walking alone down the empty highway of life.
I have this image of you. Lying on your flat on your back on your bed with your long hair and your giant sideburns, with your fists clenched and your eyes screwed shut tight with tears working their way out of the corners of your eyes,
wearing a wearing that tie-dyed Led Zeppelin shirt that had Apollo the Sun God on the front. By the way, I had two of those shirts so I could wear one while I was washing the other, so I never had to be without it. It was all I wore for 6 months. When I was a sophomore, I think. I wore that Zeppelin shirt every day for 6 months while listening to, you know, Cinderella or what have you. You missed the detail that the lights are all off in the room, of course.
Yeah.
And just sitting. Sometimes I was in the bed. Sometimes I would just sit in a corner. I didn't really have a closet that you could get into as such. Like, I had sort of a wardrobe that didn't. You can't brood in a wardrobe either, by the way. That's a thing. That's one of life's truths.
Yeah.
You can sit in a closet sometimes, like if you're a girl and you're going to write poetry. Maybe, like Lane on Gilmore Girls. You can't really brood in a closet or an armoire. It doesn't really... It lacks the same punch. But I would just sit there in the darkness, just staring like at the middle space and just sort of, you know... She'll be sorry. Someday I'll make glib observations about this on a radio show, and then she'll see the error of her ways. This video is ridiculous, by the way, because it's just like... It's like they just got stock, like, public domain footage from the National Geographic channel or something. It's just like a guy took a helicopter out and just flew around and, like, filmed stuff. You know, what's this? Well, it's a shot of a river. What's this? Well, it's the Serengeti Plain. What about this? It's an ice floe. I mean, it's just like there's nothing going on in this video. It literally is just endless shots of, like, open wilderness.
Well, you know, the song is called Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone. Maybe it's actually a song about, you know...
Global warming,
environmental causes...
Attention, Tom Kiefer, if you're listening right now, and who knows, you might be. You ought to rewrite this song right now or license it to that that World Wildlife Federation, or to Greenpeace or somebody. And you wouldn't. The thing is, the video wouldn't even have to be changed. You could use the video as it stands, just but like morph in like a polar bear.
Yeah.
You know, going blah, 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 in the water. And then you're gold.
Some adorable meerkats in the middle of it.
Exactly. And a lot of, like, slow motion shots of, like, animals doing things that look vaguely human. Like, you know, where it looks like they're kissing one of their offspring.
Right.
And then, you know, but it could all be gone thanks to global warming. Money in the bank, baby. Ka-ching. Right. I'm laughing through the pain, Don. I'm chortling to keep from crying. These are the top five songs to which I would brood following a breakup when I was a younger man. Don Taylor, we're up to number four. What is the number four song?
Number four is The Cure, Pictures of You.
You going to make fun of The Cure now?
No.
All right.
Was this during your dating hot goth chicks phase?
The thing is, I've never really dated hot goth chicks. I'm trying to think. I don't really know. See, that may be one of those things, that I just... I don't, one of those girls, the type of girl I pined for, but I never actually dated. I think that may have remained an entirely, theoretical sort of pursuit of mine.
Well, they probably looked at your tie-dyed Led Zeppelin shirt and just immediately wrote you off.
Yeah, I mean, and who can blame them, really? I mean, it's not like that even looked bad as such in the context of, late 80s, early 90s high school. But it was just fundamentally not what they were looking for, because goth girls were always looking for skaters. Who had that stupid Alf haircut? It was like a guy dressed in Vision streetwear, or like a guy in a black leather jacket named Seth, with like a who was edgy because he had like a nose stud or something, or like a guy in like a Descendants shirt. And I was not that guy. I was a guy who sat in front of his bedroom mirror at the age of 16, by the way, just trying to recite Paul Stanley audience raps from memory. Just sitting there, just so I could do every word of his introduction to, cold gin or something. If you had driven by, and again, you and I grew up, you grew up in L.A., I grew up in Kennewick, so you were in a somewhat different environment, but teenage, the teenage wasteland years, that is sort of its own continent, where things, there are commonalities and similarities. But if you had been somehow in my hometown, if you had, just driven by my house late at night, let's say in the years 1988 through 1990, if you had just been happening down my street, at 1 a.m., and had just stopped your car and rolled down the window and listened, you would have heard, from far off, my voice going, how many people do you like to get high? As I was just sitting there just rehearsing, for the day that Kiss asked me to come open for them or something, or to, fill in for Paul.
Now, my high school was Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, literally, one of the high schools that Crow went to do his research was our rival high school.
Really?
18 blocks away. So
that's pretty cool.
So, that was, not long before I was actually, doing my thing. So, yeah, it was, the Fast Times at Ridgemont High is an eerie reflection of the high school years I had, to the point when I first saw it, I was awestruck because I went to school with a guy who was Jeff Spicoli. I mean, the hair, those, whatever they're called, those Mexican pullover woven shirt
things. Like a poncho, not a poncho, but yeah, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Every surfer guy would get one of those when they went down to Tijuana or Cuernavaca or wherever, and they'd come back and they'd wear one of those every day. And yeah, I went to school with that guy.
It's, Cameron Crowe has a great eye for that sort of detail, too. It's the thing that you have sort of forgotten you did, and then as soon as he reminds you of it, you go, oh, my God, I did that, and everybody did that. One of Cameron Crowe's real skills is capturing that moment or finding that moment that has never been shown on film, and people go, ah! And it's the shock of self-recognition. Here's a dumb example of that in Elizabethtown, which is not a great movie. In Elizabethtown, though, there's that sequence where Orlando Bloom is talking on the phone to to Kirsten Dunst all night. And at one point, his phone starts to go dead, and so he reaches over and he picks up the charging cable and plugs it in and then continues talking while it's charging. The theater I saw that movie in, everybody in the theater did that little, ah! And then they laughed because everybody thought, I do that too. It's like he knows me, but which is, it's a dumb thing. But it's like, but it'd never been. It's just a little slice of real existence that had never been shown before. And I would imagine there's any number of people who saw Fast Times, especially in that part of the country at that time, and were just probably just amazed at what they saw, how strongly. And that's what makes it easy for that's how bands have careers, right? That's what makes it easy for Robert Smith to sing this song and to have it be a huge hit, because there's always a new crop of angry and depressed 15-year-olds sitting in their room staring at a black light, and holding a copy of the Satanic Bible that they got at Borders, and just thinking nobody understands me except for Robert Smith. Can I just tell you what almost made this list? Here's what almost made this list, and it didn't, because I put The Cure in place and then everything got bumped down. Was Something I Can Never Have by Nine Inch Nails. Speaking of he's the only one who understands me.
I was actually thinking of Nine Inch Nails when you were saying that about Robert Smith.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, I would listen to Something I Can Never Have and be he's been there. He's walked this same lonesome road. These are the top five songs to which I would brood following a breakup when I was a younger man. Don Taylor, what might number three be?
Number three is Black Sabbath, Changes.
This is the most depressing song ever made. Do you know this song?
No, I don't.
This is a song.
I'm feeling happy.
Well, that
right out of the
gets
gate.
Right to the point.
You kind of know where you're standing right there.
I've lost the best friend.
This is one of those songs where you just. It would not be inappropriate in the background to just hear the slow creak of the shower rod as the body's weight sort of hangs on it.
I've let her go.
And it's got the creepy echoing string section there. It's real tinny sounding.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I always found this part to be the most haunting, that the chorus wasn't really descriptive of his state of mind. It didn't talk about, like, I'm feeling really down. I'm blue. I got the blues so bad. I'm Ozzy Osbourne. Woo-hoo. It was just that, like, it was just that phrase, like, I'm going through changes, which made it sound really spooky. Like it was some sort of emotional altered states thing happening to him.
He's turning into a giant cockroach.
Exactly. Yes, yes, it's exactly what happened.
It's his Franz Kafka.
I'm going through
homage.
Kafka. Get out of my head! Like he opens a door and he's just become a baby seal.
Grown a third arm on his back, like in the dark backward.
I don't know. It's ever since Janice left, I can't get rid of this thing. Is it, can you file my nails? Someone says, dude, I've dated several hot goth chicks, which is weird because I'm so not goth, I'm not even white. Ha ha, in your face.
Well.
Followed up by, ooh, I think you're onto something. I was a skater. All right. Also, he wants to pass along to you, SoCal rules.
Oh, well, okay.
Who can disagree with that?
You might want to keep in mind that I moved to Portland.
Yeah.
And, you know, but sure.
I'm depressed now. These are the top five songs, and this, I think, was another high school song. These were all, I mean, most of these songs, I think, it's not like I didn't brood later on in life. You know, I like to think that I'm a man of many and surprising layers even now. But you gotta imagine, most of your heavy brooding time, that's in high school. Maybe yeah. Early 20s. You know, that's where really the bulk of your sulking happens, is in those years. Most of these songs are from my high school. So when you ask, like, tell us a brief story. And by the way, I should say, looking at this list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these six songs, by the way, were used to brood over the same girl. So, you know.
Yeah. See, my thing is that I only have actually one breakup story from high school because I never actually had anybody to actually break up with me until my senior year of high school. Most of my high school career, and honestly, this was a pattern that continued well into my 20s, but... really, it was about me pining from afar for people that I was absolutely sure would not want to have anything to do with me. So to spare myself the rejection, I would just never, ever approach them in any way whatsoever. It was years later when I realized they were teenage boys.
Yeah.
And I was a teenage girl.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been that hard.
Really, no offense. You know, you're a beautiful gal. You could have been a fence with a knot hole in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you know, you always have to think, if I knew then what I knew now, I would be happy to just have that one nugget of information.
Yeah.
Just that one thing would have changed my entire life. If I understood that merely by being female,
yes,
I probably would not have been rejected.
Yeah, you have even odds at that point. Yeah, you didn't have the confidence that can only come by wearing a Led Zeppelin shirt, though. That's the that's the thing.
So depressed now. And it only gets worse.
Yeah, okay. These are the top five songs to which I would brood following a breakup as a younger man. Don Taylor, what's number two?
Well, number two is one of the great brooding songs of all time. Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You. And this is a great song.
It's a beautiful song.
And a great brooding song.
See, another song that probably it's easy to make fun of, probably most people do make fun of. You know, like if you're some Michael Ian Black dick, you know. Right now, if your head is on VH1, popping up in a corner saying something snarky, you know, in lieu of actual thoughts about music. It really, it's a song it's easy to poke fun at because it's so great. And it's the great songs and great videos that become instantly iconic.
Yeah.
And being instantly iconic and recognizable, of course, is the first step. It's the necessary step to being an object of ridicule. So that's how you know it's a great song, because everybody immediately looks for some sort of a, you know, a wacky joke to go to.
And this is not a song that I ever brooded about to a relationship, and there's nothing specific in this song that I relate to. But if I'm driving in my car and this comes on the radio and I really actually listen to it,
yeah,
it will bring tears to my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Every single time.
It's, you know, and I'm,
it's just such a universal experience that she's singing about.
And, you know, and the video helped with that a lot. A, because it brought it to, you know, everybody's attention, but also because apart from those shots, I think, again, with like the photographing a river just going by, but the shot of just her and the camera and nothing else. In a way, that's its own kind of cheat, because it is a very carefully crafted image. But also, like, it kind of forces you to listen more carefully to the song than you sometimes do when presented with a lot of visual imagery. You know, a lot of times you're so distracted that the music is just like a soundtrack to whatever you're looking at. And there's those little trills she does at the end where her voice cracks a little bit, and I'm just a sucker for the voice crack. And, like, the single tear and the whatever. But it's just such a great song. And I love the fact that she doesn't alter the Prince lyric, the thing about all the flowers that you planted in the backyard, Mama, you know, they all die. When you know, that's like some weird Prince edible thing, but she just left it there. And and even that just sounds like it totally makes sense to you when you're in that mood. You hear it and you're like, oh, that's exactly how it is. I kind of lost track of her after Universal Mother, I think, was the last album of hers that I really followed. She has this song. There is this Sinead O'Connor song that is, it's like one of the most brutal. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's one of the most emotionally brutal songs I have ever heard. Because she had this whole 1-2 punch where she got divorced and then she got rejected. But she got divorced, and I don't think it's not a big secret that she was in love with Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
And who rejected her. He did not return her affections. And so she had that whole thing going on. But she recorded this song called The Last Day of Our Acquaintance, which is about meeting your spouse at a lawyer's office to finalize your divorce papers. It's beautiful. I get chills actually thinking about it. It's beautiful, but goddamn, it's so hard to listen to. Especially when you know, and you can tell sometimes, Kate, when you listen to a song, you can tell, however it's written or phrased, you know, sometimes you're like, that guy lived this song. You're like, this happened to the guy. Even if they change it a little bit to maybe kind of mask that fact, you can listen to a song, I think, and tell if it's something the songwriter went through or experienced. I mean, it just sounds different. And you hear that song, and just like without even knowing it, I could tell that she had gone through it. So, I mean, she's really amazing. I am, I have kind of lost track of her, but she really is just an amazing talent, amazing voice. And I love her whole Pope ripping thing. She's just like the hottest thing I've ever seen in my life. That little vocal trick out of which Sarah McLachlan made an entire career.
Yeah.
Okay, at least it's not Friday.
No,
so, like, tomorrow
Friday.
We could do, like, top five songs with the kazoo as the lead instrument, or top five songs with animal noises, or a children's chorus.
Puppies. Are there a lot of songs about puppies?
Yes.
Okay. We do songs about puppies.
I could probably five, and, now, is it going to be, now, are you, because with the whole devil-Satan thing, are you going to make them actually be about dogs, or they just have to have, like, dog in the title?
They could just have dog in the title, I guess.
I can do that.
I think it's dogs. See, but have, songs about dogs are different from
puppies. There might be five songs about dogs or puppies. I'm just saying, like, in a pinch, though, like, is it acceptable to do top five songs with dog or puppy in the title?
You probably could. Like, you know, yeah, I know Black Dog, you know, isn't really a song about a dog.
Puppy Love?
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we've just given it. Man, we almost can't do it. We've given it all away.
Now we'll save it for another time when people have forgotten.
I'm so depressed. All right, these are the this next song, this is the one that started it all. I was driving in the car, and this came on as I was passing the Wendy's, reading about the Baconator. And this is the song that it sparked the entire thing of, like, I remember brooding to that song. What other songs did I brood to? And then immediately I had this list put together, and it was just, I didn't know then. If I'd known yesterday what I know now.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, that as a bonus, this will depress you too, probably, because you undoubtedly brooded to this song and this album.
Oh, yeah. Well, this we've talked about this album. Yes. I had this album on cassette in my car for probably 2 years. And every time I was in my car, if I didn't feel like listening to the radio, I just poked that cassette in. And it was the only cassette I ever had in the drive. And so I listened to it over and over and over again. Plus the fact that Adam, what's his name? He has the his voice is basically in the same vocal range that mine is,
right.
So I could sing along with every song.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. So I've heard this, and I just recently loaded this album onto my iPod. So I've been listening to it again in the car, like, every day.
Did you? Well, so did I, by the way. Did you do the old person thing of, like, I've got this brand new piece of technology. What music from my youth can I put on it?
What have I listened to over and over and over? Well, after our Bowie top five yesterday, I ended up loading like six David Bowie albums onto the iPod. So I've been listening to Bowie like all morning.
And it's just one of those things, where you're just you know, like, I have a whole world of music. Let me get Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
You know. All right. This is number one. What is it, Don Taylor?
It is Counting Crows, Raining in Baltimore.
The circus is falling.
So there is a specific story that goes with this. I almost feel bad. I almost feel like I should stop and not talk over the song. So I grew up in Kennewick, and then I lived in a bunch of places, and then I moved to Salt Lake, and then, you know, San Diego, and then here, and then whatever. So I moved to Salt Lake, actually, with a girl. She and I moved there together. And it's one of those things, like, where at the time, you may have done this, or you may have had some equivalent to this, but it's like, you know, at the time, it is just the wrong thing to do. Like, it's not going to work out. Sometimes this is like when you move in together. Yeah. Couples will move in together, and it's like in the back of your mind, you're like, no, we should not be moving in. Yes, I'd love to, honey. Let me sign right here. Okay, great. And you just like, no, mustn't. But I was just, you know, I was young and I was a jackass and, it was for the most, you know, I was just being a stupid, selfish guy. You know, like, I didn't want to move to a new scary city, the mean streets of Salt Lake. I didn't want to, you know, move and, you know, not know anybody in the city. So even though I knew that it was probably, that this relationship was not going to last for the long term. I mean, we'd been together for, you know, for a fair amount of time, I guess. But you still, you just have that, like, and and chicks, I think, especially, like, you know, if it's like, if it has potential for long term or not. Like, that's a yes or no. Like, you kind of know. You may not know if it does, but you know if it doesn't. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to be spending the rest of my life with this person.
One of the differences, though, between men and women a lot of the time, though, is I think women think to themselves, yeah, but maybe something might change. Maybe we could fix the problems.
Yeah.
And whereas guys tend to know, a lot of times guys know, even while they're, like, on the first couple of dates.
Yeah, they bottom line it.
They're just like, this isn't going to be a long one.
Yeah, no, they can figure out. They're like, nope, it's not going to work out. I'll pull the ripcord now. But I was just gutless and stupid, and so I was, and so we moved, and you know, and the whole thing. And I say we moved, but it's like, you know, she moved. I think quit a job, you know, went, like, did the whole packing up our crap and moving and whatever. And I just, you know, and the whole time I was like, no, mistake. And sure enough, it's like, we got there. We were there for, like, I think a couple of months, and it was like, you know, it was that thing where you just wake up one day and you're like, this is just wrong. And not even just for myself, but clearly for both of us. Because I'm like, every moment we're here, she could be, you know, like, living somewhere else, dating somebody who probably she does have a long-term future with, because it ain't me. And so it was, you know, it was a dick move to let her move there. But at the same time, it's like, then once she's there, it's like every day that she stays, it's like, I am just sort of like, it's like I'm some weird succubus just sort of draining her life. So finally, I had the whole thing of like, you know, baby, this isn't working. You got to leave. Whatever. So it was like the sad, and it wasn't even an angry breakup. It was just sad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she gets like and she has to drive back. And so she gets like the U-Haul, and we're like sadly loading all of her stuff in or whatever. And I swear to Christ. So we just, we have to pack up all of her possessions and all of her, you know, many, many things. And we, you know, we say all the things about like, we'll stay in touch. You know, you'll write me, and you know, I won't write back. But go ahead and write me, and all of that stuff. And then she says goodbye and she leaves. And I swear to God, she had been gone like 9 seconds. And then like my Pioneer 6-disc CD changer put this song on in the background. Like literally as I see her turning the corner and driving out of my life forever, like this just starts playing in the background. And it was just like, I don't even remember what my reaction was. But it was just one of those moments where, you know, where God was either giving you the best or worst possible song for the occasion. Jesus. Really, being young is terrible. Ugh. How about you, Don Taylor?
What about me?
I don't know. Does this song have special significance to you? We can't go out of my story. It's too depressing.
I don't think it really does, this particular song. But I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because my first husband and I, when I decided to move to Portland, I was looking for something to do with my life. And I thought, I'm going to go to culinary school. I need a career, and I need to learn to do something I don't hate. And I like cooking, and I've been watching those shows about, like, professional chefs, and it looks cool. And so I shopped around for a school, and we figured out something. I said I liked Portland, and he wanted to get out of L.A. too. And in the meantime, our marriage had just been really crappy for, like, a few years. But, you know, we're still hanging in because of that whole... We're still best friends, and it's awesome, and we can do this. And also, you just
don't talk about it.
Yeah.
It's just like, and it's the thing that you know is there, and you just don't talk about it. And it's not, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong about this. It's the thing, and everybody's had this, but it's the thing where you both know that it's not working. You don't talk about it, not because you're angry or whatever, but because it's just too sad. Like, it's just too depressing to bring up the thing you both know needs to be brought up.
And I had tried to get him to go to counseling, and he wouldn't go to counseling. And so it was like, okay, well, I guess we could just fix it ourselves. And somehow in the course of making the plans to move to Portland, getting together and like putting together all the money we needed to move and renting the truck and saying goodbye to our friends, doing stuff, somehow during that process, we realized our marriage was just dead.
Right.
But we were already making these plans to move to Portland. So we still ended up moving up here together anyway and lived as roommates. And because he had promised he would help support me while I was in school, and he had already quit his job and made the plans to leave. And so we moved up here, and I had rented this one-bedroom apartment in West Lynn. And so basically, you know, he lived on a futon in the living room, and I had the bedroom. And, and we got through it. You know, he started dating someone. And we were still sharing an apartment.
Was that weird?
It was weird. It was very,
did you get
very
jealous?
Weird. I did. Even though, like, I didn't want to be with him anymore. But, yeah, I got jealous because, you know, how dare you love someone else? You know, because I had been, like, his first big love.
Right.
And so I even though our marriage wasn't working, I guess your ego demands that the person just still loves you more than anything anyway.
All right, I have to ask this. So you're living then together with your... You know, your husband, you more or less broken up. You're living together as roommates. So I have to ask only because we've discussed this sort of dynamic before. So when he started dating, the minute he started effing somebody else, did you have like the urge to just to go to bed with him?
Oh yeah.
Okay, because that's a guy thing. Guys totally get that.
Oh yeah.
All
because
right.
You know, you just want to make sure you still got it.
That's the thing. Yeah, I'm just curious because that is very much a thing that guys do, and I wanted to make sure that we were not alone in that.
And I had dated some people too, but the difference was I was getting laid. He got a girlfriend.
Right.
And it was
right.
Like, damn you! How dare you find love? You know, so, yeah.
Well, that wasn't really the big pick-me-up I was hoping for.
The thing is, though, we still ended up parting as friends, though. I mean, it was rough to get through all of that. But, you know, most of my relationships I've had, when I put together my brooding list, they will be songs, basically, I brood you. Pretty much from me being dumped. I only have two relationships I ever had where I just ended up hating the guy entirely. Usually it ended up being like, we should not be dating. This isn't working. Rancor, rancor, rancor. Okay,
right.
Let's still hang out and go to movies together. I've always been that sort of person. I don't end up loathing the people I've dated, so or even the guy I was married to.
All right.
He was at my wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's kind of great. And I mean, I say it's weird. I mean, I say it's weird because it's uncommon. You know, it's just that it's not. I mean, that is very much the exception because everybody does that whole like, we're going to stay friends and we're going to, you know, which is always just a lie. Nobody ever, you know, people say that and they don't, maybe they mean it, but it certainly doesn't change the fact that they don't actually do it. So I think it is certainly unorthodox, but it's great that was the case with you because, I mean, you and I know lots of divorced people and it's like, and they, you, there's that always that thing. Well, we're gonna stay friends. No, we're gonna, you know, for the kids. And it's like, you know, and look, she's still a great gal. And I just, you know, and then you skip ahead like 3 months, and it's like, oh god, that psychotic bitch ex-wife of mine. You will never believe, you know, which is sort of a horrible, you know, thing. I ugly divorces are. I mean, divorce is bad, but ugly divorces, hearing people talk like that, it really makes me uncomfortable because it's, you know, because it just sort of seems like, you know, like you could just move on. Like you don't have to dwell.
Well, yeah. God knows, you know, I've had a couple of relationships, like I said, where I just had the guy turned out to be just a complete bastard.
Right.
And I harbored a lot of anger. But honestly, you know, it's like I think that a lot of times there are people who end up hating everyone they break up with.
Right.
And I think that sometimes people feel like they have to.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way they can like deal with being hurt.
I didn't want him anyway. He's a jackass.
Yeah. It's like they have to, that the only way they can, they feel like the only way they're supposed to feel about the person now is to just loathe them.
Right. Right.
And I don't, no, you have a choice. You have options.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this the girl who predated Sarah on the show. This girl Christina, who you were probably not a listener. Patrick probably remembers her.
Yeah,
so this is the last thing I'll say. And we got to end it. I have an upbeat song for us to end on too.
Oh, good.
And then we'll roll on out of here. Don't forget tomorrow, Big Jim Willig with another installment of a Humor Mini Comedy 101. Don Rickles will be his subject, and Lisa Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches, who may bring food. And I will eat. I'll eat part of that probably. I don't want to screw myself out of that preemptively. So Christina, who's this girl who predated Sarah on the show and I think had known, so I think they were in the same sorority or something together. But she at one point moved because her husband's a youth minister bringing Jesus to children. And I guess you couldn't do that in Portland. Jesus apparently doesn't exist here, or he exists too much, or, you know, like there are not enough children here. So they moved to Bend or some, you know, some damn place. But I took it really personally. When she left, I behaved really poorly when she told me she was, and she did the thing of like telling me she was leaving, and she was like so sweet about it. And then she's like, in a month. So I had a month to be like a colossal dick to her, and fortunately it was only for like a week, and then, you know, and then she like called me into a production room, and she like, you know, like let me have it about being such a bastard. But I was doing exactly that thing of like the breakup, and I was like, I will make it feel better by hating her now. And then I was just like a complete jag off, for like a solid, and would have been like all the way to the end probably. So, all right. Well. Now I'm depressed again. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, and we want to thank our many fine business partners as well. It is Thursday, December 2nd, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, we're back again tomorrow at noon for the award-nominated Legion of News.
Yes.
At Cascadia.fm. And a little bit after 1 o'clock tomorrow for another installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll go out with something a little more cheerful. Thank you all for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.